Down with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation cussing and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! Pismo Beach and all the clams we could eat. No. Here we are. It's Born in the Side Thursday on the Horn. It is the 28th day of May, 2015. This program is live. And our home is at headonradionetwork.com. That's where you go if you want to jump into the chat room. And hey, why don't you? Thank you very kindly. Jeremy in Vermont, loud and clear on TuneIn. Bob, good. We are, in fact, reaching, and one of these, in fact, for all of those in the chat room at the moment, good evening, 4 of 9, good evening, Gerald, good evening, Jeremy in Vermont, good evening, Jug of Punch, good evening, Texas B, all of whom are capably and carefully moderated by indefatigable, inveterate, veteran chat room moderator, Sparky, who, being a third-stage field navigator, has folded space to become Man Cave this evening. Because the Man Cave is not going to be inhabitable during these hours for much longer. Is it Sparky? I mean, it'll get up to like a billion degrees Fahrenheit here in another month or so out there. Yeah. So, it really is. It's Thorn in the Side Thursday. And, of course, a gentle reminder that you too can participate in the chat room. Yes, absolutely yes. You can participate in the chat room by going to headonradionetwork.com/chatroom, picking yourself out a screen name, and picking yourself out a password, and hopping right in. Of course, a gentle reminder obtains that the chat room is off-limits to right-wingers, birthers, deathers, ninthers, tenthers, baggers, birchers, booger-eaters, libertarians, republicans, and jackasses generally. Okie doke. Sparky Dunny is not afraid to use it. Right. Good. So come on by. Enjoy yourself. Let's see. Oh, yeah. By the way, this is a listener-supported effort, the Horn is. There are no ads here for Swedish mattresses developed with involving foam developed by NASA or little herbal hair tonic pills that'll grow hair on a bowling ball that you can pick up off of said mattress with an auric vacuum cleaner or Bose wave radios that will blather a constant stream of my friends Rush Limbaugh. No. No Buy Gold Now ads. None of that foolishness. None of those Jim Crack hustles. No. This is independent broadcasting at its very finest, and it's been going on for 10 years now. And doggone it, more than 10 years, actually. But anyway, we survive on listener contributions. Otherwise, I wouldn't mind to say, hey, everybody, we hit the Powerball. Hasn't happened. But that's how we survive. Only give forms. The way we do that is via the PayPal interface at headonradionetwork.com/contribute. And you'll find there a series of fields to fill out, many of which you can just leave blank about, your employer's address and what Aunt Matilda's corset size was and all of that stuff. You can leave that. Just get to the next screen. And I don't care if it's $5 or $500, it all matters immensely. And this evening, this Thorn in the Side Thursday, I would be remiss if I did not note that the fundraising goal this evening is $500. That's because we ended up $195 short on Tuesday and $100 short this last evening. And in point of fact, we've got a $200 fundraising goal this evening. So all that taken together, $500. It's rather important that we meet that goal because it's how we stay on the air. I'm not going to do Oral Roberts and, you know, God's going to call me home or anything. No. It's just that if every bill doesn't get paid, whoop, the lights go out, the mic doesn't get hot, and the program doesn't happen anymore. So we need 10 people at $50. We need 50 people at $10. One person at $500. Two at $250. Five at $100. 10 at $50. 20 at $25. Right? Yeah, I think. Yeah, 5, 10, yeah, 20 at 25. Any combination thereof to help us reach the goal because, A, that's what it is. That's where we stand. B, the first next week is going to be rather complicated, to say the least. There will program note, there will be a regular broadcast on Monday, June the 1st. Tuesday, if we can keep the fundraising going, Agnes and I will get in the car and drive to Cleveland to broadcast for the entire Horn family and anyone who wishes to participate the memorial for Bill Mr. Stress Miller live from the Euclid Tavern there on Universal in Cleveland, Ohio. We will then turn around and try to get up really bright and surly on Wednesday. Pat's out of hell back here to be on air on Wednesday because Thursday and Friday there will undeniably be no. That because the doodle is graduating high school. And we are very proud of her, as are the members of the family coming in from more than 1,000 miles away, or thereabouts. And we're all going to be together and have a little bit of family time Thursday, Friday, and Saturday. So, we're really proud of Doodle. Doodle, it's Doodle, Kath, D-O-O-D-L-E, Doodle. We're really proud of her. And It deserves notice, but it also means that there are going to be two nights there where we're not raising funds at the beginning of the month. So that's why making the goal this evening and tomorrow and Monday becomes so much more critical. Okay, can we do that? I don't know. I just hope so. I guess we'll cross our fingers. No, Marty, that's her nickname. Everybody in this family has a nickname. Yes. So, now, as to Thorn in the Side Thursday. You know, we reserve Thorn in the Side. Oh, by the way, the mail, got to do the mailing address, not just PayPal. Some people don't like PayPal, and that opens the door to the mailing address. Which is how you participate if you want to use the U.S. Postal Service. And that is The Horn, 1038 North Eisenhower Drive, PMB, P as in Paul, M as in Mary, B as in Boy, Bravo, PMB 318, Beckley, Beckley, WV 25801, with the gentle reminder that all checks and money orders should be made payable to the Horn and not to Bob Kincaid because Boss Man Wayne puts on his spider-proof gloves to go to the echo chamber that is often our mailbox, and he deals with all of that, and I can't just turn around and drive, make an 80-mile round trip to sign things. Doodle, Kathy. Doodle. D-O-O-D-L-E. Delta, O-O, Delta, Lima, Echo. All right. Thorn in the Side Thursday. Thorn in the Side Thursday. Dear God. And by the way, remember, if the lights go out, it's Mark Levin reruns for everybody. You'll love those. Thorn in the Side Thursday, though. Oy vey. These are real. I thought we would work a little, shall we say, close to home this evening, because we've got some genuine stupiditas. I think that's the Latin version. Emanating from right here in the hills and hollers of almost level West by Cole, Virginia. Stan. A couple of different examples, as a matter of fact. And one out of the New York Times as well. Sometimes I really have to question the editorial decision-making there at the New York Times. Today is one of those days. But no, it turns out... Well, where'd that damn thing go? Maybe I'll... Okay, hold on. A very good thing happened the other day. And the good thing that happened was that the EPA... The Environmental Protection Agency did something that the Environmental Protection Agency should have done long ago. But rulemaking takes a while. You might want to get the hockey puck for this. There's going to be some stupid. There's a lot of stupid at work here. Oh, before I get to the stupid, I have a lovely note. Before we get to Thorn in the Side Thursday, before we really grab the brushy by the briars. A note coming in from our recently heard from the first time friends, Jackie and Lynn. In Vancouver, and this just created a full body smile. Well, I wished I had a camera the day you said hello to us. I hadn't told Lynn that I had sent an email, so when your show came on, I was in the living room and I heard Jackie. Bob just mentioned he received an email from Lynn and Jackie, and then I heard from Burnaby. And by this time, I was standing in the same room. She was speechless, and that is hard to do. It was great to know you can communicate across countries and so fast. Isn't it amazing? So it's fun to know we can connect with you. If we can contribute, then we will. We're like dinosaurs with computers, but we know how to send emails. I did use a computer a lot in my work, but when you don't use it daily, you forget some things, and maybe advance to other lines of communication in time. As I've said, I don't always sit and listen, but our home is a rancher, and there's a computer at both ends of the house, so I can hear the show from anywhere, and if it's sunny, you get to go to the deck. Oh, goody, I'm on the deck. I get around, you know. Our buddy Dennis and me, we mow the grass down in Kentucky. Our home is a busy place with cats, fish, many varied animals that pass by. We're near Robert Burnaby Park, so in the summer months, the deck and pond with waterfalls, 70s music, and sun is never boring. That just sounds lovely. It's wonderful, and that keeps us grounded. We're big hockey, Vancouver Canucks, football, Seattle Seahawks fans, and are into the playoffs right now, hoping for the New York Rangers, not the Ducks. Anyway, a little background. I'm from New Brunswick, worked as a nurse for many years, moved to B.C. in 1968. Lynn was from Northern Ontario, moved here in 1968. We met in 1989, and this past January we celebrated our 25th anniversary together. Canada has same-sex rights for 10 years. Yay, congratulations. During our time together, we have been active in women's health and know all about protesters, the danger, and the like. I did nursing and management. Lynn did some client care and technical work. So our backgrounds keep us very interested in the news we hear from the USA about women's rights and politics and other things. We keep hoping things will get better. We know that when things happen in your country, we soon follow. Our present government is trying very hard to do and say many things to do as much damage before the election in October to at least make the people think with all his ads that they will get great benefits if he stays in government, but that wouldn't happen if he does get in. And soon it will be attack ads against the NDP and liberals. I hope what happened in Alberta with the NDP winning is such a big win. That's been Mr. Harper's home and province. But it will be the NDP and liberals' chance to wake up the people to make a change in government. At least Harper gets a minority, and maybe that'll stop his king-like plan. Oh, I hope you're right. It would be such a delightful smack in the chops for the right wing, even down here, to see the Harper government collapse. And to see Stephen Harper get on his pipeline surface truck and ride off into the sunset. So they close, Lynn and Jackie, by saying, "We are listening." And I'm so glad you are. And I'm glad to know that you're part of the Horn Family Commune congregation. You can hold the fort down there in Burnaby. All right, then. Now, that's the fun and the pleasant and the nice. Now let's deal with the business of Thorn in the Side Thursday, shall we? Oh, do let's. I mentioned the EPA. Well, a couple of days ago, the Environmental Protection Agency, and this was Wednesday, after years and years and years of comment and rulemaking and all of that, they finally cleared up a nasty little mess that's existed for a while, and naturally it was a nasty little mess that was created during the Dim Leader administration, which was in fact the incubator for God only knows how many awful ideas. I mean, really, you can't count them all. I don't think. Damn pollen. Ugh. And okay, so here's the deal. Here's what happened. The Clean Water Act is a federal law that is designed to prevent the wholesale ruination of water in and of the United States. Okay? Fairly straightforward, right? But because we are afflicted with that disease known as Republicans, as a clear idea like taking care of the single most precious resource this side of clean air that we have in this country, well, that's a job killer. Oh, really? Because I hate to make broad, sweeping, general statements like this, but it seems to be factual. I mean, the Republican Party can't find any natural resource that they don't want to either destroy or monetize, or, you know, just generally befoul. So much multitasking to do around here. So it turns out that something on the order of 60% of the people in the United States get their drinking water supply from unprotected water sources. The EPA rulemaking will affect, in other words, it will positively impact, it will preserve and protect the drinking water of some 117 million Americans, which isn't quite half, but it's a startling number when you realize that the drinking water of 117 million Americans is threatened. Because of actions in the Supreme Court during the nasty-ass years of the reign of error of George W. Bush, 60% of the streams and millions of acres of wetlands were put at hazard. So the EPA has worked tirelessly over the years to create rulemaking that would, in fact, protect what are called the waters of the United States. Because the Clean Water Act expresses jurisdiction over the waters of the United States. The rulemaking, according to Assistant Secretary of the Army Joellen Darcy, makes it clear which waters are covered and which ones aren't. Yeah, that 117 million Americans, that's roughly a third of the population. Yeah, 1 in 3. 1 in 3 people in the United States, up to the point of this rulemaking, had a water supply that was unprotected against abuse, pollution, befouling, monetizing, profitizing, corporatizing, etc. So the new rulemaking will work to protect downstream water sources. Joellen Darcy, Assistant Secretary of the Army Civil Works Division, says, science now shows what waterways are connected. For generations to come, Americans will have the clean water necessary to protect our way of life and our economy. Good! Right? Can we just all say good? Thank you. Good. Lovely idea, that. Comes a little late for, the 300,000 people who on January the 9th, 2014, were poisoned because the coal industry takes precedence takes precedence over the needs for clean drinking water in a place like almost level west by coal Virginia stand, but, you know, what the hell? And oddly enough, waterways are all connected. The Elk River rises in northern West Virginia, and it flows southward until it joins the Great Kanawha, which, in fact, is comprised of the juncture of the Gauley River, which rises in central West Virginia, and the New River, which rises in North Carolina and is actually a remnant of the second oldest river on Earth, the Great Tays River, which once bisected a giant proto-continent eons ago. Those two rivers joined to form the Great Kanawha. The Great Kanawha flows then and is joined by the Elk, and they together flow out to Point Pleasant, West Virginia, where they join the beautiful river, the Ohio. The Ohio then, of course, travels into the Mississippi. The Mississippi is also fed by the Missouri, although you can make an argument as to which one is the greater river, the Missouri or the Missouri is a source or the Mississippi, but, you know, we kind of not going to fight about that. And it flows down to the Gulf of Mexico and ta-da! Right? Yeah. Streams are interconnected. Oddly enough, Joe Ellen Darcy says science now shows what waterways are connected. Who was the Greek philosopher 2,500 years ago who said you can never dip your toe in the same stream twice? Recognizing the essential changing nature of existence? Right, yeah. So, EPA Administrator Gina McCarthy said, farmers, ranchers, and foresters are all original conservationists, and we recognize that they're not going to be hurt. Normal farming operations will not be harmed because there are exceptions that are already carved out under the Clean Water Act. There aren't any new requirements for agriculture or forestry, and industries, those are all industries which retain what she called all the decades-long exemptions they currently enjoy. The folks out at New Belgium Brewing in Colorado are happy about this. Andrew Lemley in the Think Progress story by Samantha Page says, our brewery and our communities depend on clean water. Beer is, after all, over 90% water, and if something happens to our source water, the negative effect on our business is almost unthinkable. 80% of voters in the United States support the new rule. Streams that had once been protected but then became unprotected as a result of the actions of the rats on the Supreme Court during the Reign of Error, well, those streams are protected again now. It's so lovely, isn't it? Now, don't get too excited. The lawsuits are already coming. In addition to lawsuits, the House of Representatives has passed a bill that would compel the EPA to retract the rule because, you know, who the needs clean water anyway? Hey, kid! Drink a Coke or something. Water. Representative Richard Hudson said, if POTUS had his way, the EPA would be able to regulate ditches and streams and puddles in our backyard. Yeah, because he's a drop-dead ignorant teabagger. There have, by the way, been something on the order of 4,000 meetings. 4,000 meetings about this rulemaking. So we're pretty clear, this being Thorn in the Side Thursday and everything, we're pretty clear that this is a good idea. And I suspect if we were to go digging around in it, you and me and us and we being who you, me, and us and we are, well, we would probably probably come to the conclusion that it's too weak. All right. So, the home of EPA hating is, of course, West Virginia. I mean, a state that has rainforest-level precipitation, a state whose streams are the beginning point of the water supplies of vast swaths of the Southeast. I mean, for God's sakes, the headwaters of what become the Ohio River are in West Virginia. The Monongahela River rises in Marion County and flows north. Ask a West Virginia University graduate why the Monongahela River flows north, and they'll tell you. We'll leave that joke for another time. We don't play Pitt anymore anyway, bastards. That was such a good rivalry. So, you know, the Ohio River, that's kind of important. And then there are all the little fingerling streams that come down from the mountains and join things like the Clear Fork. Clear Fork's a stream down in the Sacrifice Zone, or Pond Fork, or the Coal River, or the Marsh Fork. Those are essential to people's drinking water. Now, in part because of this, because of the assault on the Clean Water Act that took place during the Reign of Error, more than, I know you've heard me say this before, and maybe it just goes in one ear and out the other. But take a minute to let this really rattle around a little bit. More than 2,000 miles of streams have been destroyed, disappeared, buried under the toxic detritus of mountaintop removal over the last 15 or 20 years. 2,000 miles. Imagine how many gallons that is, even if these are just little trickling rivulets. They matter. And 2,000 miles of them are gone. Hey, California members of the Horn family, how would you like to have 2,000 miles of streams about now? Or the water from them? Sounds pretty nice, doesn't it? Very nice. But, and this is where we get to the thorn in the side Thursday part, let's check in with Charleston, West Virginia's favorite mackerel wrap, the Charleston Daily Mail. It's a right-wing rag, and frankly, it's an insult to the parrot whose cage you would line with it, or the guts of the mackerel that you would wrap with this. It's awful. Nonetheless, Joel Ebert of the Capitol Bureau writes, West Virginia's congressional... Wait a minute, is Barbie listening? West Virginia's congressional delegation lashed out against President Barack Obama and the Environmental Protection Agency on Wednesday after the agency, along with the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers, announced the final version of a rule that seeks to clarify what types of bodies of water can be protected by the government. No, really. David McKinley and Evan Jenkins and that guy who couldn't keep an office in Maryland and had to move over and carpetbag as a hillbilly. Mooney. And, of course, Shelley Archmore in a bad wig Capito. And, of course, Joe Manchin have all gone on record saying that Kenyan Muslim usurper in our White House is trying to take over America. Destroy the coal industry. God bless it. Greatest country in the world on earth now forever today, but not anymore, because Obama. Barack Obama wants to have clean water in America. Thanks, Obama! You're more than welcome, Barbie.
Yeah, they're having a hissy.
Opponents, including many Republicans and all five West Virginia congressmen, call the rule another example of the federal government's overreach. A simple effort to protect drinking water supplies is a heinous act of Kenyan Muslim usurperism. Yeah, at this point in time, why don't we just call Joe Manchin the teabagger that he is? Really? Last October, six governors and 11 attorneys general, including West Virginia's Patrick Morrissey, and, you know, calling him West Virginia's Patrick Morrissey is a bit of a misnomer. He's New Jersey's Patrick Morrissey. He was just sort of teabagged and carpet bagger, whatever, down here to do the bidding of, among others, the pharmaceutical industry for whom he used to be a lobbyist. They've filed a lawsuit to try to stop it. Mm-hmm. And by the way, John Boehner, Speaker of the House of Representatives, said the rules of law and tyrannical power grab. He, of course, predicted doom and gloom, saying, landowners and small businesses, farmers and people who make stuff are going to be on the road to economic hell. Yeah. No, they didn't file suit yet. Morrissey signed a letter. Yeah, it's a dandy. Maybe we'll get to it in a minute. Wednesday, Patrick Morrissey, New Jersey's transplanted, carpet-bagged attorney general installed here with ALEC money, Patrick Morrissey said, "The rule is unlawful, and yet another example of federal overreach. The EPA and the Corps are trying to usurp, I told you, the state's role in monitoring and protecting local waterways and lands. My office will take prompt and forceful action to fight against this unlawful rule." No kidding. Patrick Morrissey apparently thinks that that the individual and several states own whatever waters are within them, and that we are not a union of states, but some sort of confederation. Oops! Once again, nullification. You know what? I trust the federal government, call me crazy, to do a better job of protecting the waters of the state of West Virginia than I do a state government that has already seen 2,000 miles of streams buried. Well, it's economic progress, you know. Coal keeps your lights on. You know, if we don't have coal, we're all going to freeze to death in the dark. You damn tree huggers. Archmore in a bad wig, his daughter Shelley, now a senator, God, you have no idea how nauseating that is to say, remarked, "The final WOTUS rule announced today," waters of the United States, "the final WOTUS rule announced today is deeply troubling.
Rather than incorporating input from Congress and concerned Americans, this rule doubles down on overreach and threatens to impede small businesses, agriculture, and coal and natural gas production. There's no question that we want to protect our drinking water sources and our precious natural resources.
Oh, why couldn't she have just said precious bodily fluids? We'll pretend she did.
But a rule that will subject puddles and ditches to regulation would lead to a massive expansion of costly permitting requirements.
Of course, the rule, because, understand, if Shelley Moore says that the rule applies to puddles and ditches, you may rest assured, you may bet the last nickel in your pocket that it absolutely doesn't apply to puddles and ditches. In point of fact, it may very well say in this new rule, this rule does not apply to puddles and ditches, but that's okay because the Republicans and the teabaggers and the birthers and deathers and ninthers and tenthers and baggers and booger eaters and whatever. See, puddles and ditches is right there, and it's got a 1,700 million pages. Don't read to me. Jesus, I hate them. On the other hand, Shelley Moore wants, along with her bosom buddy and old family friend Joe Manchin, proposed a
Water Quality Protection Act. And she said, this legislation would protect traditional navigable water from pollution while also protecting farmers, energy producers, small businesses, and manufacturers.
Joe Manchin, teabagger, crypto-Republican, and not very crypto, said,
I urge my colleagues to take immediate action on the Bipartisan Water Quality Protection Act to rein in this harmful rule.
But I particularly love how, I love how Shelley Moore says that the EPA didn't take into account the input of, what was it? Input from concerned Americans. Hundreds of thousands of comments of concerned Americans were submitted during the rulemaking process. What Shelley Moore is saying is that she doesn't like the fact that the comments that said, yes, please, protect all the water in the United States, that they weren't ignored, you know, like a Republican would, like a teabagger would, like a fracker or a mountaintop remover, or, you know, one of the thugs from the coal industry would. You know, I find it a lot easier to call the coal industry thugs than I do somebody who's been abused by the police for 20 years in an American city. I know what it feels like when the damn blasts go off. Those are thugs. Brand new Congressman Evan Jenkins, teabagger, said,
the waters of the United States rules yet another attempt by the federal government to impose more regulations on West Virginians.
You know what, Evan? You goddamn dumbass. We sure would have liked to have had a little more regulation on January the 8th, 2014, or at least 300,000 West Virginians might have, if it would have prevented them, their loved ones, their friends, their neighbors, their babies, their fetuses, from getting poisoned by your buddies at Freedom Industries. Fuckwit. Then there's David McKinley, who, if his brains were gas, would not have enough to fill up a piss ant's motorcycle and ride it halfway around a BB.
Said, I've visited West Virginia farms and seen what the EPA wants to regulate. These ditches and puddles only have water when it rains. This is nothing more than an excuse for the EPA to expand its control over the lives of everyday West Virginians. It defies common sense to punish farmers and homeowners for something Mother Nature controls.
I have yet to see Mother Nature stop a coal company from burying a stream. Yeah, exactly. See, there we are. There's Gerald and me on the. There's a little bit of latency in the internet, but right there on the. Thinking the same thing at the same time. Gerald says, excuse me, sir, but I would have liked to have had more regulation on 1814. Bingo! West Virginia, 54% of the people here rely on drinking water sources that are fed by small streams. Those streams will be protected under the new rule. Those are the kinds of streams that were routinely buried in massive mountaintop removal valley fills. Karen Ireland is with the West Virginia Citizen Action Group, and they do very good work in this state. She said, the clarification and protection offered by the Clean Water Rule should be a welcome relief to the ever-growing constituency of Americans who have had to scramble to find bottled water on empty grocery store shelves as the result of contamination or drought. Politicians who seek to roll back these protections at the behest of special interest groups would do well to remember that there is no group larger than the group of us who drink water, as if our lives depend on it. But, never mind. Remember, John Boehner says, it's on the road to economic and regulatory hell! You know what's hell? Being told that you have just consumed poison that may, in a few years' time, result in you, or, as you look across the room to a baby in the crib, your baby in the crib, may result in your child dying, or you getting cancer. That's hell, John Boehner, you soulless prick. That's hell. But, God damn it, they're Republicans. They can't help it if the only thing they know how to worry about is money. Yeah. Titanic Tuesday. It ain't easy. I said we might have a minute to get to the letter that was sent by the Attorney General of Oklahoma, of West Virginia, and Nebraska. Comments of the Attorney Generals of, boy, you talk about a rogues gallery. West Virginia, Nebraska, Oklahoma, Alabama, Alaska, Georgia, Kansas, Louisiana, North Dakota, South Carolina, and South Dakota. And the governors of Iowa, Kansas, Mississippi, Nebraska, North Carolina, and South Carolina. Wow, that's pretty much the new Confederacy. They wrote back in October. The proposed rule scope is truly breathtaking.
The rule introduces terms such as tributary, riparian area, and floodplain.
Introduces those terms. Well, I mean, we are talking about teabaggers. It's probably the first time they've read tributary. Yeah, way too many syllables. Riparian area.
Jesus, eight!
There's only two syllables in floodplain, but that apparently baffled them, too. And then defined these terms extremely broadly in order to declare that large amounts of interest rate, land, and waters are always within the agency's authority! Let's check in with Mr. Orwell real quick. The rule then pairs that already capacious coverage with a virtually limitless catch-all, such that almost no water or occasional wet land is ever safe from federal regulation. You got that? Safe from federal regulation. Safe from being protected by federal law. Because that's what the water has to be protected from. The water has to be protected from being protected. Because prior to the rule, those waters were not safe from being exploited, poisoned, ruined, buried, destroyed, what have you, by the job creators. Oh, truly, these people are servants of Cthulhu. The rule seeks to bring within the agency's power every water and land that happens to lie within giant floodplains on the supposition that those waters and lands may connect to national waters after a once-in-a-decade rainstorm. Well, don't worry, boys. Those once-in-a-decade rainstorms are going to be every other day. How's that working out down in Texas? It captures. Yeah, you'll notice the rule captures. All right. Hey, you. Yeah. Crick. Put your hands on your head and start marching. You've been captured by the federal government. It captures little creeks that happen to lie within the agency, within what the agencies may define as a riparian area, and covers many little ponds, ditches, and streams, again with the ditches. And it gives farmers and homeowners no certainty that their farms or backyards are ever safe from federal regulation. I like me some federal regulation. I really do. These great Solons then go on to explain how illegal the rulemaking is. God Almighty. These people, these revolting, anti-American, cokesucker, greed-headed lackeys for the polluters would honest to God feed poison into the mouths of their sainted grannies by the tablespoonful if the Koch brothers paid them to do it. Merciful God. But, of course, we have more. Because there's plenty of thorns on the branch. Oh, there's an abundance. Just to stay in West Virginia for a day or so, or a couple of more minutes, rather. Yeah, by God, I think you're right, Carol. It's Thoth in the side Thursday. Or Thorn. Did I say it was Titanic Tuesday? It all runs together when you're dealing with stupidity on a monumental level like this. Believe me, please. So, here in West Virginia, and you have no idea how lucky you are that you don't have to hear this. By the way, thank you very kindly to Sylvia for helping get us started this evening. It is badly needed, and we must catch up. We're at $500 for fundraising needs, and Sylvia has gotten us started. She doesn't have anybody standing with her yet, but I hope she will. Thank you, Sylvia, for kicking in and taking us down to only $460 to go this evening. This is much, much appreciated. No, you have no idea how lucky you are that you don't turn on your radio. And hey, hopefully you never will. You have no idea how lucky you are that you don't turn on your radio every morning and hear this ignorant dude from up in Morgantown, West Virginia, by the name of Hoppy, and no, I'm not kidding, Hoppy Kercheval. What is that the shortened form of? Hopperatio? Who knows? That's true, Ron. Ron in Raleigh says, hey, Bob, old Appalachians are new again. These sons of bitches are running dog lackeys of the 1%. Absolutely. Irish Dave pointing out, you know, puddles and ditches sounds a lot like your senatorial delegation. Never mind. Irish Dave says, speaking of resource jokes, in the Pacific Northwest, a picnic lunch on a tree stump in a national forest is called multiple use. On the other hand, what you're talking about today would be multiple abuse of the water, huh? Two, also, I would assert the Supreme Court, Republican of the United States, a.k.a. Scrotus, should be labeled Crast. Kennedy, Roberts, Alito, Scalia, and Thomas, who is silent. Crass. Yeah, I don't know. I still like rats. And we'll just incorporate that Kennedy guy. Now, you're lucky not to have to hear Hoppy Kercheval. He works for a guy who is a millionaire who tries really hard not to be in West Virginia more than he absolutely has to be, a guy named John Racy, who's run for practically every elective office in the state, and has been routinely and roundly rejected. That's because he's an idiot. For instance, back when a smoking ban was passed in Monongalia County, where Morgantown is, this is the guy who said, what? I can't smoke in my building? Well, that's just like if you was herding me onto a train car and sending me to the death camp in Auschwitz. It's exactly like that. Idiot. That's who Hoppy works for, and of course, Metro News, the organization that Hoppy is primarily the most visible spokes thing for, is just a right-wing apologist bag for the coal industry and occasionally the frackers. I haven't seen his remarks regarding the Waters of the United States rule yet, but I really don't need to. I can almost predict it word for word. No, it was a couple of weeks ago when Hoppy got all worked up about a brand new government program that has been announced and initiated called POWER. POWER is something the Obama administration came up with. It stands for, because everything stands for something, Partnerships for Opportunity and Workforce and Economic Revitalization. The mission of POWER is to be a coordinated effort involving multiple federal agencies with the goal of effectively aligning, leveraging, and targeting a range of federal economic and workforce development programs and resources to assist communities negatively impacted by changes in the coal industry and the power sector. In other words, it's a sort of little step forward toward creating a Marshall Plan for Appalachia as the coal industry winds up things here and does what the coal industry has always done, and that is to leave us sticky, broken, confused as they flee out the window in the middle of the night. Goodbye! As they chuckle, chumps. Hoppy doesn't like the power plan. He says,
that brings to mind the late President Ronald Reagan's famous admonition, I've always felt the nine most terrifying words in the English language are, I'm from the government and I'm here to help.
Ronald Reagan was, of course, a bloodthirsty maniac who can be cited as the beginning of the end of greatness in America. And, of course, never mind the fact that the coal industry is slumping as it is in Appalachia, A, because there just ain't that much coal left here, and B, because it's a filthy, filthy fuel, and the price of frack gas has made frack gas much more attractive to power generation outfits like Appalachian Power, who recently, by the way, got a 16% rate increase on the backs of residential customers here in West Virginia. So they're paying less for gas than they were for coal, and they get a 16% increase. Now, wait, you gotta dig this. This is hilarious. Well, I mean, it's really not. But Appalachian Power went to, and you know, this is our power bill here. This is why I explain that the things, you know, we got to keep up with the damn bills. Appalachian Power, in the wake of the 2012 derecho, which you've heard me talk about quite often, well, when the derecho hit, more than 100,000 of us here were out of power anywhere from a week to a month. And it was a miserable experience. That was when we lost the refrigerator, the freezer, the water heater, the washer, and the dryer, and the microwave, and the toaster oven, among other things. 80-mile-an-hour sustained winds for a few minutes, and it just blew the hell out of the crumbling, crappy power grid infrastructure in this state. A lot of it happened because the power company had been given, as a matter of law, I mean, the power company can go anywhere it wants to across your property, and you can't damn well stop them, because they are granted, as a matter of law, a right of way. But for years and years and years and years, Appalachian Power had ignored their duty to maintain those rights of way. So when the derecho came through and blew the living hell out of their grid, they turned around and asked for a 22% rate increase, almost a quarter. And they said it was because they were going to have to put in a plan to deal with the right-of-ways, which they already had a legal duty to deal with, and which should have been already in existence, but the Public Service Commission recently said, really? Okay. And you want to, you've got a legal duty to maintain the rights of way on your stuff, and you want to stick it to the consumers instead? That sounds like a great idea. Now, let's talk about this 22%, boys. Now they're going to get pitchforks and torches. They might. Granted, some of your buddies over there in the chemical industry poisoned 3,000 hillbillies, and they didn't take no pitchforks and torches, but we can't take no chances here. And to give you 22% in one fell swoop might be just a mite much. So what do you say we give you 16%? to which the CEO of Appalachian Power had to stifle a great big honking guffaw up his sleeve.
Oh, well, oh, that's going to be pretty hard, but I guess we'll have to figure out a way to survive. 16%! Oh, and we thought we were only going to get 5. Jesus Christ, go price the blue Buicks. Our boat has come into the harbor. Whoop!
So they were granted an overall 9% rate increase, but those of us who are residential customers, we get a 16% rate increase. So it's just going to be a shitty little 9% rate increase if, say, you're the successor in interest to Freedom Industries, okay? Or Walmart. That's our reality here. That's our clean, cheap, inexpensive coal-fired electricity, because coal keeps the lights on, and tree huggers want us to freeze to death in the dark.
Yeah.
I mean, we are to recall a phrase that was first coined by our dear friend Reverbo, we here in West Virginia are well chumped. They gave us 16%. Shit the bed. Why didn't we ask for 50? We would have gotten 30.
Oh, my God, for doing something we had to do in the first place, but we put it in our pockets instead. America, what a country.
It really happened. So anyway, that was an aside to Hoppy's little conniption here about the power plan.
The White House power announcement fails to mention the administration's own policies that are contributing to the economic devastation and human suffering in our coal communities.
Really? Barack Obama is running around And just popping little hydrocodones into the pills of the little hydrocodone pills into the mouths of the hillbillies. And hey,
I need you to open your mouth. Here is your Obama opiate. Now you're an addict.
Yeah, contributing to the human suffering.
The EPA's unilateral actions cutting carbon emissions at coal-fired power plants to unobtainable levels have thrown West Virginia's primary industry, which is already struggling with competition in the marketplace, into decline. He's got it backwards. That struggling in the marketplace is the thing that's kicking coal's ass.
Because cubic yard compared to ton, you can get a lot more gas out of the ground with a lot less labor and at a lot higher profit than you can by blowing up mountains, which still takes you 10 or 15 people to ruin 5 million acres in about 5,000 acres in about 5 years' time.
Right.
But he can't say that about the frackers. You notice he says struggling with competition in the marketplace. He can't say that fracking is kicking coal's ass, because then the frackers will bitch to John Racy, and John Racy will call Hoppy in on the carpet and ask him what the hell he thinks he's doing, criticizing the godly, upstanding, Bible-believing, Christ-centered fracking industry that's poisoning everybody's water and fouling the air with the same particulates that come off of mountaintop removal operations and can do much the same monstrous harm to various human organ systems. Oh yeah, Hoppy's a real genius. Washington's, you know how I talk about this guy over in Beckley having been a 962nd tier right winger? Well, Hoppy's about a 723rd.
because it's all just so predictable.
Washington's answer is to throw some hush money at the problem. No, hush money is money that is paid to cover up a crime, Hoppy. It's not a crime to try to keep people from getting poisoned by your buddies in industry. The poisoning part, that's the crime, Hopster. Huh? This year, the Power Initiative will award grants using $28 to $38 million to pay for planning and preparation for the post-coal era. The administration promises more money in future years, but that's uncertain. Yeah, because he thinks it's just stupid to plan for the day when there's no more coal in West Virginia, which is coming a lot sooner than anybody really thought. Obama supporters and a few desperate souls will appreciate Washington's benevolence, cheering the federal government's attempt to foster the long-desired economic diversity. He puts those in scare quotes. I don't know who he's quoting. This guy isn't so not a journalist. Economic diversity, you know, as if it's a silly thing, as if mono-economies are the best thing since sliced bread, and who wouldn't want to live in a state with a mono-economy? I mean, why not put all your eggs in one basket? Economic diversity. And it's possible that the power creators actually believe central planning communism and yet another underutilized job retraining program will help. Ah, yeah, why would you want to retrain people who are coming out of jobs that they're never going to have in an industry that doesn't exist anymore and they're never going to have a job in again? Why would you want to retrain them? Yeah, I mean, you know, Hoppy's a libertarian. Fuck 'em. Let 'em go and starve if they can't pull themselves up by their own goddamn bootstraps. America, the greatest country in the world on earth now, today, forever. Even if Washington's efforts are in good faith, they pale when compared with the damage done by the administration's policies. But do they pale in comparison with the damage done by the cheap frack gas? Shut up! Quit talking about the frack gas! I don't like it when Mr. Racy screams at me! That man's nuts! I mean, the things I've had to do, the compromises to my morals and my ethics... He can't take much more. And you want me to talk about the frack gassers being the people who are actually destroying the coal industry? You're just mean. It's as though the White House stabbed the coal industry in the heart with the right hand while the left hand offers a tissue to help clean up the mess. Yeah, that's exactly what it's like there, Hopster. It's just like a murder. Only it's not. Because the federal government isn't creating 4,000 excess deaths per year in West Virginia's mountaintop removal communities. Your buddies in the coal industry are. Oh, don't you just feel so godly and upstanding and moral, Hoppy, doing what you do every day, you pig. What a turd. What power will do is give the National Democratic Party, he actually said Democratic Party, son of a bitch. I mean, he can be taught a useful political diversion. Federal Democratic candidates campaigning in coal country in 2016 can try to temper the impact of the EPA's decisions by pointing to ways Washington is helping to, according to the White House, build a better future. That he's got quotes around because it's in a White House press release. Because it's just stupid to think that there could be a better future in West Virginia than the 125 or 130 years of past that we have of coal extraction, rampant poverty, brutalization of the workforce, the poisoning of innocents, the slate falls, the gas explosions. Hey, why would you want a better future than, say, the Upper Big Branch disaster, where 29 human beings were incinerated past recognition as having formerly been human beings? Why would you want to do that? If politicians really wanted to help, they would rein in the EPA and or spend money on badly needed infrastructure.
Dumbass, that's what the Power Initiative is going to do.
I mean, the badly needed infrastructure part.
The EPA doesn't need reining in.
It needs expansion. Because, frankly, the EPA has done nothing to help West Virginia. Not a damn thing. And I don't mean that. You understand, of course, that I'm not saying that the EPA has hurt the coal industry. It really hasn't.
The lack of coal
has hurt the coal industry.
The fracking
has hurt the coal industry. But the EPA has done next to nothing to protect Appalachia. Do you realize that even with 5 million pounds of high explosives going off all over West Virginia, well, at mountaintop removal sites, every day, do you realize that there is not so much as one, not a single air quality monitor in the state of West Virginia? Not one.
Power is an appropriate name for the program. Although it's not meant to be, the word is a stark reminder that Washington is assuming greater control over West Virginia's economic destiny.
Of course, it might be handy to note that those who have had the greatest effect on West Virginia's economic destiny, the coal industry, they've kind of not been really very good at it. Because they've thought only of themselves. They've given not a damn for the people that they've destroyed. I mean, I can't begin to tell you how many of the people who are addicted to prescription narcotics and now heroin, got another story on that one, you're going to love that. I can't tell you how many of those people got their first prescription for pain medication because their bodies were broken from rack to ruin in the mining industry, the timber industry, the fracking industry. It brutalizes human beings. And if you get hurt on the job, some $750 an hour lawyer from Jackson and Kelly or Spillman Thomas or God knows some of the other silk stocking law firms down in Charleston will show up to fight you if you get a prescription for a medicine they don't like. See, that's the problem with these goddamn Republicans. They talk about being all pro-life, but when it comes right down to it, they hate human life. The only humans they like are the ones who A, do their bidding, or B, remain silent. And those they tolerate at best. I wish I could tell you there was a happy answer. I mean, there is hope. H.R. 912, the Appalachian Communities Health Emergency Act, remains in the Congress, and thank you to every one of you who have called your member of Congress or and asked them to sign on or thanked them for signing on, who have called your senators and said, listen, the time for waiting is over. This has to be introduced in the Senate. Thank you. Thank you for doing that. Because the single best thing, and of course the Obama administration is saying absolutely nothing about it, The single best thing you could do for West Virginia would be to, and Central Appalachia, would be, you know, Eastern Kentucky, Western Virginia, Northeast Tennessee. The single best thing you could do would be to simply outlaw mountaintop removal and get busy on cleaning up the damn messes. As it is, the Power Initiative is a feeble effort at best, because it's like trying to put a new plate glass window in when a truckload of hooligans comes by every hour and puts a brick through whatever you've got there. We can't fix anything in West Virginia as long as the thugs in the coal industry are destroying it faster than we can repair it. That's just silly to think that we could. So I guess that's the filibobster, at least thus far. Would you like to engage in some conversation this evening on this Thorn in the Side Thursday? You're more than welcome to. If you would like to, the numbers are 304-574-8178. And the stress line, named in memory of Mr. Stress Miller, 304-663-4676. That's 304-663-HORN. Okay? Skype to Skype, of course, is Bob Kincaid Horn, BobKincaidHorn. If you want to reach out because you're too timid and too nervous to call in on the phones, you can always send an email, Bob Kincaid, BobKincaid, @gmail.com. On Facebook, Bob Kincaid. On Twitter, @BobKincaid. See how easy it is? Yeah. By the way, thank you. Thank you very kindly indeed to Wesley. And thank you very much to Brian. We are now only $430 away from our fundraising goal for the evening. And with, you know, just a few folks, we can get there. And wouldn't it be wonderful if we did? Because, like I said, we're going to unavoidably dig ourselves quite a hole next week. The PayPal interface is at headonradionetwork.com, and if you don't know the mailing address, shoot me an email and I'll send it to you. So let's take a little break. It being Thorn in the Side Thursday and all, we have the Green News Report from Brad Friedman and Desi Doyen coming up. That's always a treat. And until then, well, a little musical interlude. This is Conversation Radio. This is The Horn. I'm Bob Kincaid.
Trouble the water. Who's that yonder dressed in red? Wade in the water. troubled world. Wade in the water, wade in the water, children, wade in the water. God's gonna trouble the water. Who's that yonder dressed in white? Must be the children of Israel. I don't know God's gonna trouble the world.
Thursday, May 28, 2015.
This area picks up about 2 to 4 inches of rain for the entire month of May on average, and we have already seen nearly 20 inches.
Deadly record deluges in Texas and Oklahoma.
Temperatures are soaring, in some places touching 118 degrees Fahrenheit.
Deadly record heat in India.
There's going to be a lot of fires starting.
Heat-driven wildfires in Canada shut down tar sands oil production, plus President Obama moves to limit pollution in the nation's drinking water.
Outrageous. All of those stories and more straight ahead. From BradBlog.com, I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
Stand by for 6 minutes of independent green news, politics, analysis, and snarky comments.
Some rivers are rising at rates of like 20 feet in 1 hour.
Other than that, global warming's nothing to worry about. Am I right, Texas and Oklahoma? This is your Green News Report. Okay, Desi Doyen, we got a lot to catch up on this week. So, even though we've got several new Republican 2016 candidates jumping into the race, we will wait until next week to give their positions on global warming, since we're trying to keep track of all of the candidates. People will just have to imagine until then what those Republican positions on global warming might be.
Yeah, that'll be just a big guess right there.
Actually, there is a bit of nuance in this new set of candidates, but we'll get to that next week. What do you have for us today?
Well, first, extreme weather is raging even more extremely around the world. Record-breaking rainstorms caused record flash floods in Texas and Oklahoma over the last week, killing at least 17 people so far, many still missing. States of emergency have been declared for over 90 counties in Oklahoma and Texas to release federal disaster relief funding. Texas Governor Greg Abbott said the breadth of the damage was unprecedented.
Moments ago, I had the opportunity to fly over Blanco River and to observe firsthand what the devastation looks like. And you cannot candy coat it. It's absolutely massive.
To give you an idea of just how extreme this event was, in central Texas, the Blanco River rose 26 feet in 1 hour at 1 o'clock in the morning, sweeping hundreds of homes off their foundations. The city of Houston was overwhelmed by more than 10 inches of rain in just 24 hours on Monday, causing flash floods that inundated the city's flood control infrastructure and major highways and damaged an estimated 4,000 buildings. The irony is that in just a few weeks, this outbreak of extreme storms has swung Texas out of an extreme record drought that has gripped the state since 2011.
From record drought to record floods. Now, who in this room has been warning about exactly that for years and years?
In India, no end in sight for a record persistent heat wave that has now killed nearly 1,200 people and melted roads in New Delhi, which hit a new record high temperature of 118 degrees Fahrenheit. According to India's state meteorological agency, extreme heat waves in India are now more frequent, increasing by a third since 1960, which they say is a result of global warming.
You don't say.
In the Arctic, America's northernmost city, Barrow, Alaska, is having a record hot month of May. Fairbanks, Alaska, broke a new heat record at 77 degrees this week, warmer than Phoenix, Arizona. In Canada's Yukon Territory, a record two-week heat wave is fueling raging wildfires that have, interestingly, shut down tar sands production and forced evacuations of workers in some areas.
Well, so there's an upside, I guess.
In California, now in its fifth year of record drought, farmers with senior water rights along the Sacramento River say they will voluntarily cut their water usage by 25%. It's part of a deal with the State Water Board to delay deeper mandatory cuts until next year. Is global warming pushing these extreme weather swings?
Yes.
Well, according to science journalist Andrew Friedman of Mashable.com, on the broadcast this week, both climate change and a strong El Nino pattern brewing in the Pacific are turbocharging extreme weather.
El Nino and climate change, these are both factors that are tilting the odds in favor of a certain outcome. You know, El Nino is a more direct instigator. Climate change is a little bit more of an accomplice that sort of is hiding within sight, but sort of in the background.
Hiding in the background.
Finally, President Obama on Wednesday issued sweeping new clean water regulations to restore federal authority to limit pollution in the tributaries, streams, and wetlands that feed into the nation's drinking water supply. The new rules apply to only about 60% of the nation's bodies of water. They're strongly supported by the public, but congressional Republicans, big agriculture, fertilizer and pesticide manufacturers, property developers, and the oil and gas industry have all vowed to defeat the new rules.
Of course they have. For much more on all of our stories today and the ones we could not get to, please check out our website at greennews.bradblog.com. Download our reports anytime via iTunes, Stitcher, or TuneIn, and find us and follow us on the Facebooks and the Twitters at Green News Report. For bradblog.com, I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
And this has been your Green News Report.
Clear water. The nights are cool and I'm a fool. Each star's a pool.
Well, I'm kind of glad I didn't choose that for the bumper. I very nearly did. 26 minutes before the hour, we are halfway through this evening's program, this Thorn in the Side Thursday on the horn. And thanks go out. Thanks go out this evening. Just now, to Joyce, thank you, Joyce, very kindly, for taking us down to only $410 to go with fundraising this evening. It is, well, I keep saying it's much appreciated. I don't do justice to the sense of gratitude that we all have here for everyone's determination to keep this going. You know, it would be it would be unfair if I was to say that well, never mind. All I can say is that I remain persistently, constantly humbled by the determination you show in keeping this program going. You know, when we get a little when we get a little spare revenue, we pour it back into the horn too. And that and but it's the lion's share of it is your doing. And for that, I say thank you. Let's run over to the Skype line and talk to our buddy, the Angry Indian. What do you know, Angry? There you are. Hello. Stand by. Oh, angry. Angry. Did I hear you connecting there for a second?
Hello.
There you are.
Yeah.
Yeah, see.
Sorry about that.
It's just I worry. Did I press the wrong button? Have I kicked a cord and disconnected something?
Yeah. No, it's a button I didn't press.
Too many damn buttons.
Well, my producer has changed things in here, so I have to learn how to adjust. But yeah, I just wanted to pay my respects to Bill, because it's a Friday and, you know.
No, it's Thursday.
I mean, it's Thursday.
Yeah.
And he's not here, you know. I miss him. I mean, I didn't know him. You know, I only knew him from the show, but he was a big part of my experience when I checked you out, you know. I don't know what else to say.
I'm missing him a little bit more every day, Angry. I mean, I really, really do. And I know that, and I'm getting notes from people from the Horn family telling me how much they miss him too.
Yeah, I didn't think it was going to affect me this much, man. You know, I mean, I mentioned him on one of my shows. I said, yeah, you know, this is dedicated to Mr. Stress, and we linked to it and everything, but it, you know, I mean, listening to him and what he had to say, it was like when I was growing up and sitting around listening to older men talk about how things, you know, not so much how things were, but their perspectives on how things were and how it relates to what's going on. And for him not to be around now, I mean, I don't want to overdo this or anything, but it's a real gap. You know, I just want to say that. It's a real gap not having him around.
It certainly is. And I really, really hope we're going to be able to get on the road and broadcast his memorial come Tuesday evening, because, one, I want to be there. I want to be there. Agnes and I want to be there to sort of, to represent the Horn family that thought so much of him. And I have a feeling that there's a whole lot of people who would like to, who would like to participate in the evening, even if remotely.
Yeah, well, I mean, I'm there in spirit. You know, I mean, I didn't even notice Cat, but you know, having interacted with him a little bit show.
Yeah, it became pretty obvious pretty quickly. What a treasure trove and what a font of information. And just what a man of great goodwill he was.
Yeah. So, you know, having said that, this whole Duggar thing and Mike Huckabee you would think that this would be the end of the goddamn Republican Party. You would think that'd be the end of Mike Huckabee.
No, but they're zombies. They can't be killed.
It seems like that, you know. What the fuck do you have to do in politics in the United States in conservative circles to get any sort of wow? We really should be ashamed of ourselves and everybody else.
There's practically nothing you can do to get booted from the right wing evangelical base of the Republican Party, because all you have to do is look up and pull a Jimmy Swaggart and say, I have sinned against you.
Yeah, but they're not even doing that. Todd Akin hasn't said anything about his legitimate rape nonsense. They've done nothing but defend him.
You know what? I would not be a damn bit surprised if Jim Bob Duggar didn't wind up in Congress over this, okay? Let me just say that.
Well, the reason why I'm bringing it up is I've been hearing some real defensive chit-chat about bikers, about Josh Duggar, about Huckabee, about Limbaugh, about the entire fucking GOP, about Fox News, you know, about Ann Coulter, about Pam Gelder, who's trying to do it again. There's a whole new Draw Muhammad contest popping up someplace, and she's one of the people behind it. And this one is being led by Marine. You can go to rawstory.com and check this out, where he says, I don't have to be politically correct. I'm a Marine. So,
Are you talking about this thing in Phoenix? Is that what you're talking about?
Yeah.
They
want to repeat a Texas so that they can, you know, swear to God and 12 other white men that, you know, the Islamic threat is coming. It's here. And, you know,
yeah, they're gonna
for
exactly they're gonna start at Denny's, of all places. A motorcycle gang.
But that represents America, don't it?
Well, you know, I mean, to the extent that Denny's was sued how many times for refusing to seat people of color and things like that. Remember, do we all, just to make sure, Angry, we all do remember who the parent, who the successor or the predecessor to Denny's was, don't we?
I would know. We didn't have those in the government.
I mean, same yellow sign, same color words. Before it was Denny's, it was Sambo's.
Oh, really? Something else I've only heard of. You know, never actually saw one. But I've heard of them. I've heard of them.
And
yeah.
Then they've had this ongoing problem at Denny's with their people refusing to seat people of color, harassing people of color, whatever. So it makes sense that this latest thing. You know, after the Twin Peaks incident, with all those well-armed bikers sitting there checking their social media while a sheriff's deputy had his back to them, with all of that as prologue, these clowns say the recent attacks in Texas where two armed terrorists with ties to ISIS attempted jihad. So here's what they're going to do: they're going to start at Denny's in Phoenix, and they're going to have a cartoon contest. That's intended to inflame people of religious sensibilities who are Muslim and believe that the Prophet Muhammad should not be depicted. And from then, according to their Facebook page, get this, Angry, this is just eye-rollingly hateful and stupid. Everyone is encouraged to bring American flags and any message that you would like to send to the known acquaintances of the two gunmen. This Islamic community center is a known place that the two terrorists frequented. People are encouraged to utilize their, T-H-E-R-E, of course, I mean, they're fucking teabaggers, Second Amendment right at this event just in case, that's I-N-C-A-S-E, our First Amendment comes under the much-anticipated attack, and among other things, some of them are planning to wear T-shirts reading, Fuck Islam.
Fuck Islam, yeah. Well, yeah, I mean, the whole thing about them arming up and showing up, and I got a constitutional right to do this. I'm a Marine, goddammit, and I can be as politically incorrect as I fucking want. Because we all know that politically correct is really a Republican term for, I want to call you a nigger and I can't get away with it any goddamn more because people are telling me who I like that I'm wrong. So, yeah, that's what the fuck is going on. And, you know, they're rolling on this, you know, white people are victims because of the Waco shooting. You know, they're coming after our religion. They're coming after us. All of a sudden now, they give a fuck about free speech. The Constitution doesn't matter in Baltimore or Ferguson, but it certainly matters when it comes to white folks, you know, even though they might belong to 1% biker gangs. And, you know, I've been hearing all week, this week, about how the groups that were involved in the Twin Peaks shooting are not criminal bike gangs. That the law has been coming after them since the 60s. Because they just don't like American freedom, and these men and women represent freedom. My next show is going to have audio. Yeah. You know, I'm hearing this all the time, that they're not violent, and that the 1% bike gangs are better than the rest of American society because they're more integrated, because and not everybody that was arrested.
So were the banditos the troublemakers? Is that it?
No, the banditos are the victims, from what I'm understanding.
But the Cossacks are the victims.
I'm hearing that they're victims, too.
So the victims were all shooting at each other?
No, apparently they didn't fire a shot. That's what people are trying to tell me, that the only people who fired their weapons were the police. And how this came to me was people said to me that they thought it was a goddamn shame. Two people said this, that they thought it was a goddamn shame that I wasn't standing up for the victims of Waco, being that I am always complaining, as they put it, about every 28 hours a black person is being executed by, you know, a police officer or a George Zimmerman in this country. That because I have supported the Baltimore protesters, I supported the Baltimore stand in Ferguson, that I am a hypocrite because I am not supporting these poor white bikers who were shot up by the police, who are being discriminated against the police because they're bikers. And I said, look, if you've listened to anything that I've said, I haven't written anything yet, but anything that I've said about this, I've made a distinction between organized bike gangs and bikers. But every time I talk to somebody about this, it's just bikers. And then it goes from bikers to white people. So, you know, look, Republicans, conservatives, and scared white folks in the Klan are always going to take advantage of fear-mongering and loathing. So, you know, you had this freak-out happen in Texas. But the fact that somebody kicked a hornet's nest doesn't matter. So, you know, they're victims. So if they go to Arizona and something else happens, they're victims. You know, when that jerk, what was it, Pastor, whatever his name was, Terry Jones down there in Florida set fire to that Quran and had these and caused these people to get killed in Pakistan and in India.
Right.
And a few other people in Egypt, right? He never took responsibility for that. He was a victim because people were complaining to him. I mean, look at this Republican bastard that runs a fucking child welfare center, is a born-again Christian, adopts two children, feels that they're possessed by Satan, and then farms them out to a fucking pedophile.
Yeah, you know, I almost forgot that story. I almost forgot that story in the wake of the Duggar thing. Right.
Well, hey, Duggar said that anybody that does what the fuck his family is involved in deserves the death penalty. Is he saying that now?
Yeah, they thought they disappeared that from the web, but the web forgets, the internet forgets nothing, and I shared that last night. Anyone who commits incest should be executed.
That's what he said. Well, hey, you know, Rush Limbaugh, our motherfucking OxyContin goddamn friend, who's got a lot to say about people in Appalachia when it comes to drugs and shit, except when his fucking ass gets caught. Well, that son of a bitch, he said the same thing. If you're white and you get caught doing drugs, you deserve to be under a jail because you represent white people. When he got caught with OxyContin, he went to the American Civil Liberties Union and begged for them to fucking help him. And then they helped him pro fucking bono. He's a goddamn multimillionaire. They helped that son of a bitch pro bono. And then he went right back to his motherfucking stick against the ACLU and encourages Republicans to this goddamn day to defund ACORN.
I thought he laid off the ACLU after they saved his bacon.
No, just for a minute.
Oh well,
it didn't last long. It was just for a minute.
Never does,
because you know he might need them again. He's not going to save us so much. He might need them again. You know, for all of the crapola that he pumps on his show. At some fucking point, he's going to claim, hey, man, you know, I got a First Amendment right to sit here and lie. I mean, we have the wife abuser, and not even a wife abuser. In my old neighborhood, a motherfucking punk wife abuser. Well, you're a punk anyway if you fucking do that kind of shit. But if you're going to do it in front of your child, and then you're going to talk about morality and parenthood and the fucking
ghetto. You mean the way that Bill O'Reilly dragged his wife down the stairs by the neck? While his child or children watched, you mean like that?
Yeah. Now, can we imagine if a black, you know, pick one of these punks, Don Lemon, any of them, drag their partner in front of, you know, their child? down a flight of stairs, beat them up. Can you imagine? Every black man is a thug. Every black man is violent. You can't watch these niggas. I mean, we just had somebody in the Virginia State Legislature call a goddamn colleague a mug shark in public.
Oh, I saw that.
Because she has mixed children. But we're not supposed to be worried about the GOP. We're not supposed to be worried about the fact that the cops are getting away with murder, you know. And where's the GOP on this? You know, the Ron Paul and Rand Paul crowd is always telling me here in Portlandia that I really need to support the Pauls, because when they finally get rid of the whole drug war, it's just going to be paradise for black people, you know, because everything is just going to stop. It's all going to even out when white folks get an opportunity to smoke weed at the Starbucks and shit. Somehow things are going to work out for me. But let's forget the fact that Ron and Rand Paul have connections to white supremacist organizations. Not just the Klan, but violent fucking, you know, well, the Klan is already goddamn violent. They're the oldest terrorist organization in North America. But, you know, I mean, the White Patriot Party, Don Black, why, Bill White, why are we not talking about this? They have photographs. His father takes money from these motherfuckers and refuses to give the money back because he says free speech. But he runs on the GOP ticket, no problem. You know, and there are black folks that think Rand Paul gives a fuck. You know, he insults you 1 month and then he comes around and talks about the drug war. Or he talks about the NSA.
Well, but see, he's, Rand is, and that thing in his head are in a pickle. Because he wants people to think that he's this libertarian intellectual, which to me is a contradiction in terms.
Mm.
But at the same time, he wants to pander enough to get the mouth-walking, knuckle-breathing vote in 2016. And, you know, with what is, I don't even know how many there are now, 20, 29 presidential candidates. But George Pataki just entered the race. Really? George Pataki?
On what grounds? On what grounds? Anybody on the East Coast can look at Jersey and ask why.
No, that's New York. No, I mean, New York is Pataki.
Well, New York and New Jersey, because you got Christie, right?
Well, yeah.
You don't think Christie and Pataki have a history?
Oh, you know they do.
Come on.
God.
Well, they got a history. You know, yesterday
it was Rick Santorum.
Oh, Rick Santorum can kiss my ass. I mean, somebody.
Well, maybe yours, but not mine, brother.
You know, the hell with him. And I'm not even getting on him for bringing the fetus home. I mean, you know, I think that's nuts. But you know, go ahead and do that if you're going to be anti-abortion. But then you turn around and you do that. That's one goddamn thing. But remember when that jerk jumped up and down talking about the weapons of mass destruction were found? And it took, like, the Pentagon maybe 18 fucking minutes to turn around and discredit that son of a bitch. But he wants to be president. He's a lighter version of John Bolton.
That seems fair, yeah. Yeah.
You know, he's a Catholic version of John Bolton. He's always, somebody's coming after you. Somebody's coming after you. I just heard a speech this morning from him on Democracy Now! Where he announced his candidacy. And he goes, for the working people of this state. The working people? Santorum, you don't give a damn about the working people. This is the man that wants to make you pay for the weather reports. He doesn't believe that weather reports should be free.
granted, we got about an hour left in the program, but I don't want to start drinking yet. Yeah, because, I mean, and next up, we'll make the pilots pay, too. Oh, no.
That's the clown car, right? Then you got Piyush Jindal. I know he wants to be out there.
Yeah, but he hasn't yet. So, I mean, all I can figure is that for most of these people, you know, they're just looking, it's just a hustle. They'll get a book deal or a speaking gig or a radio show. Some of them are in it for the vice presidency. I think that's clear. I think Mike Huckabee would take a vice presidential nomination in a goddamn minute. Because, see, that, no, don't laugh. Because
I laugh because I know it's true.
Well, see, but you got to understand, of all of the religious goobers out there, he's the one who really, I think, buys into it more than most, because he feels like he is the, and you got to use capital letters with this angry, man of destiny. Because, see, he was just a pissant preacher,
when he wound up lieutenant governor of Arkansas. And then the governor of Arkansas had to go and do some quality time in Club Fed. And then, bang, Huckstermee's governor. And he can dig that whole heartbeat away from the presidency thing because he thinks his great big juvenile bearded delinquent in the sky is gonna reach his nasty little thing, lightning finger down, just bzzzt, whoever's in front of him, and you know, bang, the man of destiny is president.
Well, he's got Chuck Norris behind him, so why would he have any fear?
Never mind why he'd have any fear. Anybody who would pick Mike Huckstermee as a running mate has a lot to be afraid of. I wouldn't have anything less than a goddamn phalanx of food tasters if Mike Huckstermee was my vice president.
Hey, I remember when people were talking about Barack Obama and McCain as his vice.
You mean those third way jackasses?
It was talk in the Democratic tea houses over here for about two or three days about, well, why not McCain? Because he was one of McCain's proteges. I know a lot of people forget that.
We try.
You know, but but Obama and McCain used to be pretty tight. I mean, they used to have these, public disagreements, but... You know, I mean, almost always Obama's like, well, we have to respect the senator because, you know, he's just that and the other. And he'd say, yeah, well, you know, Mr. Obama's one of these young Americans that's really going to make a change. So, yeah. You know, I mean, the only reason McCain and Palin didn't win was the simple fact that the business community did not trust either of them. And neither did the military-industrial complex. The only reason Obama got in because they knew he would play ball. And he has played ball in Yemen. The FBI is all over Africa now. I mean, what the fuck, man? You know, there's a little bit of America everywhere, sticking a gun in everybody's goddamn face. You know, in the meantime, the only people that seem to be fighting motherfucking ISIS and shit, you know, are the United States, only because we kind of have to. It's kind of the fault of, right? And goddamn Iran, who they're bitching with all the fucking time, but at the same time, who else is fighting these motherfuckers? Totally out of hand. What would Huckabee do about this? Pray? Or decide to just light up everybody and start over?
No, he wouldn't have any problem lighting up everybody because God would tell him to do it. He'd take it to the Lord in prayer, and the Lord's voice sounds a lot like Mike Huckstermee's internal monologue. Let's put it that way.
Pretty much. Well, he's not the only one. I mean, we talked about this not too long ago. These guys, like you said, they feel that they're on a fucking mission. They feel they're on a mission. I mean, the two times I attended some Tea Party events, kind of because I had no choice, they were right in front of the fucking post office. And I was kind of surprised that they allowed them to do that. I mean, they all stand with their chin up in the air like Francis X. Bushman. Like, you know, if you follow me, somehow this is going to be all this glory. And it's like, you know, get the fuck out of here, man. You guys led this shit to this goddamn ruin. You know, I mean, come on, I'm still dealing with people just the other day. Well, when Obama invaded Iraq, I'm like, what?
Huh?
I'm like, quit it. Yeah.
Did not.
Yes. Go online and look around. There are people who are saying when Obama invaded Iraq and Afghanistan, they are not blaming Bush for anything. They're not holding him responsible for anything. And his brother is saying, yeah. W is my he's my international defense advisor. I'm going to be following his advice. And it's like, wait a goddamn minute. Your dumb brother is the one who, the Crawford coward, is the one who got us involved in this in the first goddamn place. All right? We're sending black, Spanish-speaking Indians and natives from this country over to Iraq, Afghanistan, and every goddamn place else, and then they come back here and get shot by police. Or they go like Sergeant James Brown, was it James Brown, I believe his name is, go in for a DUI in Texas and never fucking come out.
And come out
and
dead,
then they come out dead, tell the family he died from natural causes, and it turns out they beat this man to death. But motherfuckers want to talk about Memorial Day to me. So, yeah, you know, I mean, this next election is going to be a motherfucker, man, because the first thing is, it's going to be about taking America back. Take it back, right? So that means that there's got to be a white person. They don't give a fuck who it is, but it's got to be somebody white. Okay, they got to take it back. because they lost it, because the Muslims are in charge. You know, I mean, if you listen to Pam Gelin and Fox News, we're under Sharia law all the goddamn time. I mean, right now, during this conversation, America's gone. The Muslims are in control. And Huckabee talks this bullshit. Rand Paul kind of talks this bullshit. They all goddamn talking. Jeb Bush is definitely going to start talking soon because Obama's not coming back in the office. So they can say whatever the hell they want. You know, and really, I don't know how they can really go against Clinton anyway. She's one of them. And when is the Democratic, when is the DNC going to start saying that? And start purging the party of the people who are not really fucking Democrats, who don't support working people, who do not support fucking progressive, you know, movements. When is the DNC going to fucking get up off his goddamn ass and do something about this?
I got no answer. The problem we have, we run up against, Angry, is the fact that, you know, there's an element of the political class that thinks everything's okay. I mean, everything's basically okay. I mean, we'd like to have the Democrats in the control of Congress and the House and the Senate and get a couple of, you know, maybe Slappy Coke Can Thomas and Fat Tony Scalia could go and, you know, meet their maker and stuff, and we could give Ruth Bader Ginsburg a chance to retire and get a couple of different justices on there and undo Citizens United. I mean, there's a wish list, but, you know, it really, you know, the infrastructure's not crumbling. I mean, and so what if Walmart workers have to work six jobs to equal one 40-hour a week job meant 50 years ago economically? I mean, but it's okay because it's all right for them. You know, they're not.
Yeah.
I mean, the West Virginia congressional delegation. Joe Manchin's water's not threatened. Neither, you know, Shelley Moore Capito, when she came home to the West Virginia water disaster, her basement flooded, and she made jokes about the poisoning of 300,000 people. Okay? David McKinley doesn't give a damn. Looney Mooney is just across the river from Maryland, and it's nice up there in Cumberland. And, you know, who gives a shit? Evan Jenkins has nice digs. I mean, he doesn't have to worry about his kids being hooked on pills. He doesn't have to worry about that. You know, God damn. I mean, we're talking about West Virginia has a heroin problem now, Angry.
Well, yeah. And see, that's something a lot of the white racist trolls, which have kind of cut down since Chuck C. Johnson has been permanently booted from Twitter.
Oh, has he?
Threatening the life of an activist. Yeah, well, this is the fourth time. This is the fourth time. So you will wonder with the other three times what the fuck happened, you know, publishing people's addresses, basically setting people up to be, you know, injured or worse. And they finally took him off because they really couldn't excuse this. But Twitter wasn't stopping him. And Facebook also is really particular. You know, if you're Palestinian, they come after you. You know, if you have Native American name, a traditional Native American name, they come after you. If you support any kind of reasonable solution to women missing, you know, on the indigenous women missing on the border of Canada and the United States, or even Mexico and the United States, they will, you know, cite your thing as maybe potentially hateful. And really, it's kind of their fault, and then it isn't. I mean, you would think that their analysts will look at this, and I'm sure that they do, and I can't really blame them too much. We're all following orders, and they follow capitalist orders. But really what it comes down to in terms of online, if somebody doesn't like what you say, some flag-waving Tea Party motherfucker, they will flag your post as inappropriate or even hateful. You know, because I've been reported as a bigot, you know, and I hate all white people, and I hate this, and I hate that, and I hate Christians, and, you know, this, that, and the other. You know, I've had Westman Gump say that I hate black people, and, you know, I hate Muslims. You know, any sort of criticism nowadays – folks do not take the criticism and say, okay, now why would someone say that to me? They say, well, okay, well, if I'm being criticized, then you must obviously hate me because God is on my side. You know, I mean, Iran just had, just to show you how things can be flipped, Iran just had an art contest of his own to draw up cartoons that are clowning ISIS or Daesh. And it ended up working against what, well, not against, I mean, depending on how you look at it. You know, all of the blame went to the United States and Israel. So there are, you know, cartoon depictions of Netanyahu leading ISIS. and things like that, it's really, you know, our perspectives are really getting jaundiced because we don't have enough information. And, you know, it's easy to say that we're playing on fear because that's an obvious. We can historically look back and we can see that. We can look at right now and we can see that. But when you're in the mix and you're worried about whether or not you can pay your bills, whether or not you can eat next week and have enough, you know, for clothing, it's really hard to make political decisions. So when Mike Huckabee comes around with Pam Geller and talks about the Muslims are coming and Sharia law and all this, and we got to bring God back into politics when God was never supposed to be part of politics in the first place, doing total historical revisionism, we have a real problem when people are not talking about this on the mainstream news and not one reporter, you know, who can. I mean, yeah, there's Chris Hayes and what have you, but they can't really, and they're not really in the position to do this. Which kind of leaves everything to you, Bob.
Well, we do what we can with what we got.
Yeah, and you do a lot, you know, which is why I really hope that everyone who's listening, you know, certainly supports this show, because if you don't have alternative media, if you don't have the Bill Pressure, you don't have Tom Hartman, and they're as pretty, and Democracy Now, as mainstream as you can possibly get. You know, and then there's that middle ground of, you know, you, me, Malloy, and people like that. And then you have the other, you know, end of folks who are never really heard from. And there's some really good shows out there. Pirate Radio, Never Went Away, you know, podcast, Shortwave.
Oh, yeah.
Are very, very progressive. But you'll never hear, you know, you'll never hear these voices. And it's really not fair.
No, it's, you know, not. And that's, you know, that's something that I touched on a little bit earlier. You know, there is, if you're... If you're some asshole right winger with a voice made for print, there is plenty of terrestrial over the air radio spectrum for you to inhabit. But if you're a progressive and if you're a professional and if you've been at this for a while, but you know, if you're a progressive and a liberal, you know, we're sorry, we're fresh out of bandwidth. I mean, you know, they've snapped up, you know, ain't no stations for you.
Yeah. Yeah, but Alex Jones is on cable. He's a regular cable news channel. So is Jack Blood.
And you know what? You give me some Alex Jones money. You give me some God knows, Glenn Beck money, and I'll get on cable too. But the money really is the icebreaker here. Mm-hmm. I mean, I think back, nobody really knows. I mean, if we're just going to talk about progressive media for a minute, nobody can really calculate the inestimable damage. That's why they can't calculate it. It's inestimable. That Air America did to the prospect of liberal broadcast or progressive broadcasting, because they used a tired, worn out, really stupid model and they poisoned the well for the rest of us.
Mm-hmm. I agree with that. I agree with that.
But I mean, you know, one of the things I keep talking about here is, and I simply cannot do it right now, not so much because of equipment, but because of space limitations and infrastructure stuff. I could take this program to video and put it up on live on YouTube every night. But a few things would have to happen first. Yeah, a little bit of it's infrastructure. Some of it's technical. Because I will not, I don't think there's a market for it, I don't think anybody's interested in it. I'm not just going to point the camera at me and turn it on. Because that's just bad. Okay? I mean...
Well, it ruins the whole point of radio in the first place, if you can actually see.
Well, I mean, there's that, and I'm pretty sensitive about my image. But not so much that I would run away from the camera, but I don't find it interesting. I don't find it compelling. I am a radio guy.
It's not.
Now, on the other hand, and I'm not singling you out, angry, but on the other hand, if I could set everything up where the calls that come into the program that people are willing to put their faces on there, and I'll split screen it, and it'll be like we're looking at each other. That might be considerably more interesting. But just static camera shots? No.
Well, we've been asked to do that, and the studio that we use actually is set up for that. And we talked about it, my producer and I, for several times already, but we've always come down to the same point that, okay, so what? They can look at us and see me waving my arms and, you know, and like the tea I'm drinking and what have you, and they can see her on the board, but like you just said, we don't see the purpose in it. You know, we sat and watched Bill Press, Tom Hartman, and Malloy a few times, and several others do that, and Limbaugh, by the way. And we just didn't see the point. Radio was radio. And one of the reasons that we never went into video, you know, I mean, not whether I'm doing an interview or just, you know, while we're doing the show, is what's the point? If you have voices and you're listening to the voices, you have to use your own head. You have to use your own imagination. You have to use your own intellect to make a picture if you need one, right? And,
right.
You know, when you reduce it to images, well, you're not really thinking too much anymore because the image is there. And we've reduced everything down to images to the point where we're not listening anymore. We're not reading anymore. I mean, I live in a particularly, book-loving liberal town. Portlandia, there's more. Powell's Books is the largest bookstore in the world. And we read here. We read a lot here. And a lot of folks really do not watch television here, which is one of the reasons why I like living here. When you actually debate with someone, even if you disagree, they tend to be very knowledgeable about their position, and you can have a reasonable talk without getting into shouting. But when you know, I mean, the fact that the left has embraced this in terms of media, I don't think it's a good idea. I've mentioned that before on my own show, that they really need to get back to the basics of doing radio if you're going to do this. And if you're going to do TV, do TV. You know, trying to bring the two in and filming every little thing that goes on is just, I don't see the point in that. Because you're not thinking. You're just watching the show. And when the show's over, the show's over. That's it.
Yeah, I think there are interesting ways to do it. I mean, I'll go ahead. It's not, I don't have a patent on it or anything. I think with technologies like Skype, again, it's not so much about the images as it is about the content. But, for instance, if you had a program that was that sort of adopted the Horn philosophy, you know, the philosophy here, Angry, as you well know, is that it's interesting to hear from the occasional expert who can really, really flesh things out, but that everyday people are experts in their own lives and in segments of culture and society. And if you make them comfortable enough to carry on conversation, then you can really, really get some meaning into the broadcast. Real content. You know, because I'm sick to death of, I mean, how many millions of times has John McCain been on some Sunday blather show, right?
Mm-hmm.
And frankly, I it's meaningless to me. I used to watch those programs. Mostly now, I don't, because they're just, with all due respect to the cultural tradition from which it arises, it's just kabuki theater.
Well, there hasn't been anything like Firing Line with Bill Buckley in a long time. You know, and Bill Buckley was a conservative son of a bitch.
Right, but if you could craft a show where you would reach out to activists, the activist community, okay, and I'm not just talking about environmental stuff or Appalachian stuff. I'm talking about people who are out there working for justice regarding police violence. I'm talking about people working, who don't see environmentalism as some sort of privileged hobby, but are actually working on it from an existential standpoint. If you can start getting conversations like that going, and you become a clearinghouse for that kind of thing, I think that becomes a very, very interesting program. But not so much from the celebrity standpoint, and not so much from the professional activist standpoint. I mean, there's a big difference, for instance, between, say, having the head of the Sierra Club on to talk about mountaintop removal versus having, say, my buddy Bo Webb on to talk about mountaintop removal, because Bo Webb will actually know what he's talking about because he's been living it. You know what I mean? I think that could be a really, really compelling
And it would work as either radio or TV. There are going to be people who want to watch TV. I don't necessarily get it, but there are. And frankly, if it would expand, you know, and I'm not talking about funding, you know, the Gulfstream 5 or the Maybach or anything. I'm talking about expanding the ability of people to participate in a conversation. And especially from a liberal perspective standpoint, where we could continue to maintain the guarantee that we maintain on this program that there will be no right-wing idiocy within 1,000 miles of what we're doing here. Then, and you create that safe conversational space, I really think that could be dynamic and compelling. And I think people would participate, and a platform like, say, YouTube would be excellent. Now, I've tried, and, you know, come Tuesday, if we make it to Cleveland, you know, I'll probably be using Ustream. But both it and Livestream are notoriously unstable, and they're all gummed up with a bunch of ads. I'm sure YouTube is, too. But, well, we'll do what we can with what we got.
Well, I mean, well, Ustream works. I've seen it in action in Ferguson and in Baltimore. It was, I became aware of it mostly doing Occupy. You know, that's how they were getting most of their data out. There was several people at a location Ustreaming at the same time, but it was also being hacked by the authorities at the same time. If you were following the internet traffic, every time they set up a live feed, it was being blocked. So they'd have to get up and go to another location and set up again. They had a real struggle trying to get the message out. So, I agree with you. But, you know, we also have to be honest about something. A lot of folks are simply, they just don't want to be engaged. Now, I've been interviewing people for several years. I've been on the air since 2001. And it's really hard to get folks. Now, there are some folks that they just want to be on the radio. They want to be on TV. They want to be celebrity activists. And then there are others that are doing stuff, and you don't know about them because, you know, someone pointed them out to you. And, you know, there's a lot of folks, and it's not just, you know, the progressive movement in the United States or what's supposed to be the left in the United States. It's in every movement. You have a lot of folks who are just there for their own reasons. And, you know, their motivation is to be seen, to be famous. I mean, we just finished talking about the whole Tea Party thing. These fellows all think that there's some new version of Napoleon.
No, they're Paul Revere.
Paul Revere, yeah, right. You know, American version. So, you know, they are in this funk where they believe that they will be at the head of some kind of thing, and this will get them some kind of new position. And, you know, that happens in a lot of movements. But, you know, one of the things that I find about the left is, you know, and I get a lot of criticism. Well, you know, you spoke to, for example, this white guy about this indigenous or black subject. Why didn't you speak to somebody black about it? And they don't realize that, because they're not behind the scenes, that I've been trying to get someone, that, you know, of color on the show for 3-4 months. And they're just like, no. Oh, we're not interested. Or we don't particularly like, you know, the direction of your show, because they're afraid I might ask them certain things, so they don't come up. And that's another hassle. You know, where you have Noam Chomsky, who will talk to just about anybody who can get him, and the waiting list is pretty fucking long. You know, everybody wants to interview him, and I frankly haven't even tried. I have his email, but I haven't even tried. But the, you know, there are folks that I would like to goddamn speak to. And that is what ended up, you know, forcing me in the beginning. But now that's where I go, to speak to activists who are on the street, not to the talking heads, to, you know, even if they're working online. I mean, I've spoken to people who are in wheelchairs, Bob, who can't leave their house, but they are online, and they ride and they post information. There were a couple of podcasts at one point coming out of Canada from disabled people who were, you know, doing that type of thing. You know, it's all out there, but it's just being able to, you know, get people motivated enough to meet you halfway, because you can't put it on the broadcaster to do everything. You know, the public has to meet you halfway. If they want the information, they have to, you know, really be adamant that they want it. And I'm not just talking about money. They have to be the market that says, yes, we want this. You know, when they take over these these radio stations and they start putting on Limbaugh and Beck and turn and go over to sports radio, almost no one in the listening audience complains about it. I mean, yes, they get the people who write them every week about something. But, you know, the vast majority of citizens are not saying, well, God damn it, I'm tired of hearing Rush. I don't want him on the station anymore. And I'm not going to bother with you until you take him off. There's no real movement to do that. I mean, there's a movement, but there's no mass movement. And this is one thing where the left in America has to be honest about itself. One or two people did not make a movement. I mean, there's a brave woman who tied herself up here trying to stop the Shell thing in Seattle, up in Washington State. But, I mean, that's just one person. I mean, she was joined by a second person. That should be acknowledged. But that's not a movement. You know, it's just like with physics. You can push against a force all the hell you want, but if it doesn't move an inch, you've done no work. And, you know, real radio, real political radio, is coming from that perspective, and it will attract that type of intellect. But it has to be out there. And outside of Democracy Now! And a few other things that the mainstream is aware of, it's not there. Because, like you said, money, the conservatives, the corporate media, they can flood the entire market because they own it. So we really have to think of alternatives that are not necessarily money-based, that we have the internet, and it's possible to do, as the Zapatistas. They use the internet to great effect. It can be done. But it means understanding the medium, you know, on both sides, you know, for producers and on the, you know, for the citizenry. We have to understand the internet and understand what they're doing when they're trying to stop the internet and why they want to stop.
Well,
we have to
understand the people we're trying to talk to.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I don't go to the trouble of putting this program together every day. For wingnuts out there who are as useless to making this country better as, you know, tits on a tractor.
Yeah, but Bob, I want to interrupt you here for a second, and I want to tell you something. Because, you know, you and I talk a lot, and I always try to promote you on my show. I've gotten people to listen to you, and you know a lot of right-wing fucks listen to me.
Oh, yeah.
For whatever goddamn reason. But a couple of people that I know that are pretty moderate Republicans, they say, yeah, you know, that Kincaid, man, I didn't know that it was progressive anything up in Appalachia. I said, because you've never really looked. I said, you never really looked. And they said, well, you know, I've been checking him out, and I really enjoyed the show. I said, well, keep listening, and if you can, help the guy out. You know, so, you know, it's getting out there. But again, you know, we have to talk, you know, openly. You know, when I go to get coffee in the morning, that's a lot of the fodder for my show. Is listening to what people are concerned about.
Oh,
and asking
no,
them,
no,
well,
no, it's the same the world over. I mean, I walked in from the Rippy Mart last night. You know, it was Wednesday night, so that meant it was gas station pizza night. And just delivered a little bit of the news that I heard while I was up there, namely that one of the local pill heads and general fuck-ups had copped a plea to sexual abuse after having... walked into one of the convenience stores and flipped his penis out and shaken it around for a little bit while shoplifting and carrying on. You know, you hear that kind of thing. I mean, it's the Coconut Telegraph. You know what I mean?
Mm.
Or at least, you know, that's the line I got from the Jimmy Buffett song. But community matters, and listening to what matters to people. Will really, really inform your perspective because it ain't necessarily what you think matters. I mean, I've been posting a couple of little essays the last couple of days. We've got a school bond referendum coming up here in this little community, this county of mine. And you know, I support public education. I'm a child of the public educational system, and the public education that I got was actually pretty decent.
Yeah, you and I were probably of the last generation that got a decent U.S. education, which used to be good.
But a year or so ago, the middle school over in the most populous area, which means the most political power of the county, they ran in and just condemned the whole damn building because it turned out nothing about it met code. So they said. and the second floor of another school has been condemned. And meanwhile, the state has been wanting to, and the powers that be have been wanting to, engage in a wild-ass frenzy of school consolidating, because it's all the rage. Or it used to be, and it still is here. Nobody thinks consolidated schools are a good idea anymore, but the news hasn't reached Fayette County. So a few years ago, they had a school bond issue, and I know this is a whole lot of setup, but bear with me, Angry. And the people of the county, I mean, they were just out front about it. They said, we want to have a bond issue because we want to build a consolidated high school. And people who didn't want their kids on school buses for 5 hours a day said no. So then the state school board, the state school board, you know, the state level, Department of Education, came in, declared the entire county a failure, and took over the school system. The school system then promptly got manifestly worse. So now that a school over there that people care about has begun falling apart, we got a new bond issue on the table. And I've been posting lately about the fact that even though I support public education, I'm not going to vote yes on this school bond issue. Because the people running the school system in this county are the biggest bunch of back-scratching clods you're ever likely to meet. And I've said, frankly, that since we can't have one of these, that I'm going to treat it like a no-confidence vote, and my no vote will be a no-confidence vote suggesting that everybody from the superintendent to the entire school board resign, we clean house, and we start all over. Because they've ignored the hell out of the... You know, everybody knows that K through 4 are simply the most important time period for a child's education. You can predict by grade 3 who's going to have something in their life and who's going to go to jail. And it's not all based on skin color. It's based on educational outcomes. And the more money, the best money you can spend is money you spend on K through 4. Well, K through 4 goes begging around here. And you know, lo and behold, I got people, you know, getting in touch with me, you know, off air and away from social media going, you know, you're absolutely right. Because this is going to affect, you know, and the teabaggers are out there and with their usual, you know, taxed enough already, don't read to me. And I couldn't care less about them. They would vote against any school bond issue because being a bunch of libertarian asshats, they think that education should be in the hands of the church where, you know, where it belongs. And they want children to be taught that Adam and Eve rode to church every Sunday on the back of a dinosaur.
Yeah.
But you know, local issues matter. State issues matter. Regional issues matter. And, you know, what I hope to get and what I do get from the conversations that take place here is a much more valid cross-section of what matters in this matters to people than anything I'm going to read on any website. You know, even scanning my Facebook news feed, I see that things matter to people that I wouldn't even think about. And I don't know the extent to which the for-profit media even takes that into account.
They don't. They're not interested in it. The few professional journalists that I'm still in contact with, they're like, look, you know, they will tell me, well, we know that, you know, so-and-so is going to be sensitive about this, so just don't ask them. I'm talking about politicians that they get a chance to ask. You know, no one big. I don't know anyone on that level journalistically. But, you know, local politicians, they're flat out told by their editors, you can't ask this, you can't ask that. Make sure that the discussion stays this way, that way, and then by the time they come back to the office and write it out, it's been cut up several times by the sub editor. You know any serious question that they asked, and what you end up getting is fluff. You know, I will take people, you know, and I've done this several times, who are used to mainstream news, and then sit and have them watch the first 10, 15 minutes of Democracy Now, and their minds are always blown. because they're realizing that you can do international news and walk away within 10, 15 minutes with that much information and sit and watch the morning ABC, NBC, and, you know, whatever the hell, and walk away sitting there for 3 hours with a cup of, you know, with a pot of coffee.
And wondering, wondering if it's the news from the same planet.
Yeah, I mean, it's nothing. You know, I mean, I talk on my show. I tried to do news straight out, and it's just not – I'm not able to do it. But, you know, I talk on my show, and I feel that people get information from it. I bring people on who are activists, regular activists, who say, I don't really think I have enough to say. I say, look, you were out there picketing. You were there. Tell me what's going on. Those end up being my best shows. You know, you're totally right, Bob. The average person out here doesn't – that they're not listened to, they're totally ignored, and we have the technology today. If you have an iPod, you have an iPhone, iTouch, whatever the hell, there's all of these recording devices. Anyone with a notebook computer can do media. But the problem is, though, while you and I are trying to do progressive media, the people that we really hear from, and this has always been throughout history, are the cutthroats, the selfish, those who think that they're on a messianic mission to do things. They have the ability, I guess, you know, they have it inside of them to jump ahead of the crowd, to jump in front. They also have it within them to hurt everybody that gets in their way. When we look at someone like Hitler, or when we even look at a Churchill, these were not weak-willed men. And I'm including Obama in this. U.S. presidents are strong-willed men. They wouldn't be in that position if they weren't. And, you know, good people do not run the world. I hate to say that, but that's a reality that we need to deal with on the progressive end, on what we consider to be the left.
No, good people who mean something in their community wind up getting beatified 20 years later by an Argentine pope.
Yeah. I mean, we're talking about, Bishop Moreno, but how many people were talking about Bishop Moreno when he was saying what he was saying? They were talking against him. And then after his U.S.-backed assassin came in and shot him in the middle of church, I mean, how much more goddamn low can you get than to shoot someone, whether you're a believer or not, in the middle of a religious service? Because he said that the poor need to be protected, that the indigenous populations deserve respect and protection, that the women deserve not to be hassled. That people have a right to be free. People have a right to speak up and say, I'm being hurt. You're the government. Listen to me. And he was blown away by a U.S.-supported assassin. And now it's come out that, I mean, even though those of us who work in this kind of thing know this, Operation Condor, the plan to get rid of all of the progressive Latin American leaders in the 1970s and early 80s. I just kind of found this out, Angry Indian. It turns out that the U.S. was behind Operation Condor. I'm like, you just found that out. You did not know before that Pinochet was supported by the U.S. You never heard of Track 1, Track 2. You never heard of Henry Kissinger.
Who's this Henry Kissinger fella I keep reading about?
You know, it's, you know, the idea, and it's funny, when I sit with people in coffee, they have a general idea, but they will tell me, well, I do watch Fox. Oh, I do look at MSNBC, and the snotty ones, well, I listen to NPR, and they stick their chin up, you know, and they look down at you, and as far as they're concerned, they're 100% informed. You can't tell them anything because they heard it on NPR. And you know as well as I do that there is a class consciousness that goes along with all of this. If you have money, you just said it. If you're doing well, things aren't so bad until it affects your family or somebody that you care about or something that, you know, interests you or something that you find important. You know, people like you, those are the among the left that I've met over my years have always worried about the person next door to them, worried about somebody on the other side of the world that they would never know. You know, when they give those $2 or $3, you know, they hope that that actually goes to feeding a kid someplace.
Well, I mean, Jesus, not to interrupt, but kind of, we've been talking about. You know, I was talking about this EPA rulemaking on the waters of the U.S. and the fact that the right wing is screaming as though marauders were carrying 500-pound bags of gold right out from right out of their little gated communities. You know, just because that one in our White House wants people to have water that's fit to drink. And you know, I think call me crazy angry. I don't see that as a wild-eyed Kenyan socialist Muslim you slurper position. I see that as a basic let's not have complete social breakdown and chaos and you know, Chinese atonal music in the United States kind of position.
Yeah, but you know as well as I do. The Republicans who are really like the Santorums. Santorum knows that he's a prostitute, and you know, a good prostitute knows what the fuck they are. They go out there on the track, and if they got a halfway decent fucking pimp, they can do a little something. But they're being honest about this.
Yeah,
shit.
But this really, I'm selling my body. Yeah, but this really is touching people's lives, okay? Because these dumb bastards are, well, they're not dumb. These bastards are going to go out and file lawsuits against this EPA rule. The House is going to consider a bill to just flat out criminalize the clean water in the United States. Mm. And with the Republican Senate, you know, maybe it, who knows? You know, look. Well, the only hope is that they can't get a veto-proof majority in the Senate, or that Barack Obama would veto such a thing. But Barack Obama has no control over what happens in the courts. And any crazy-ass right-wing theory, angry, that you want to file in this country has at least a 50-50 coin toss chance of succeeding. And so this perfectly reasonable, decent, at least well-intentioned rule about preserving the drinking water of a third of this country that is at present not preserved or protected may very well get stricken down by a bunch of black-robed maniacs, okay? That's generally. Then there's Detroit. Remember last year when a bunch of poor people got their water cut off in Detroit?
There's still a lot of water cut off in Detroit.
No, they're getting ready to do it again.
Yeah, but they never turned on the water for a lot of folks.
I know, but they're going to do it to more people.
To more people, yeah. Yeah, I haven't heard that, but I'm not surprised.
And then we can run across the globe to India. Okay? You were talking about how, you know, a progressive person thinks about people they'll never meet. Well, this is that story, Angry. There are 1,300 people dead in an Indian heat wave for simple want of water. That's 1,300 mothers and fathers and sons and daughters and grandsons and granddaughters and cousins and uncles and aunts. That's communities.
Yeah, but you're talking about capitalism, Walmart.
Yeah, we're talking. Yeah, sure, and we're talking about brown people too.
Well, yeah, but hell, you know, I mean, not everybody in California is brown, but there's still Walmart, and I forgot the other company. They're taking water from California, bottling it, and selling it elsewhere. I also found out they're doing it here in Oregon State. And the only reason we know is because it was outed that they were doing this in California. They're selling the water here. We have a water shortage, but it's not the drought that is going on in Washington State and especially in California. But the point is, they're taking water from the United States and from communities that need their own water. And they're bottling, you know, they put it in bottles and they sell it. And there's a lot of water being sold to China. I don't know how many people know that. So it doesn't surprise me that India is also having this problem. But, you know, climate change isn't happening, Bob.
It's not. Climate change is not happening, even though the roads in Delhi are fucking melting, okay? The roads are melting.
Melting, yeah.
I mean, it takes some freaking heat to make the asphalt turn back to goo.
But denial.
Ain't just a river in Egypt.
you know, I want to live in a bubble. So if I want to vote for Mike Huckabee, who says that the Supreme Being will make the rules in the United States, and I will complain about Sharia law, but I want to put in Christian law, which is no different than Sharia law. See, that's the type of ignorance that I'm talking about. How people can talk about Islam like this.
Hell, it's not any different. In Islam, a woman, I mean, for all of the misogyny that's there, in Islam, a woman can get divorced.
Yeah.
In Christianity, she can't. So, yeah, there's a difference. There's probably several of them. But, you know, and you talk about the bubble, Angry. I want to expand on that a little bit, just please. Bubbles are fragile things. Anybody who's ever played with a kid with a jar of bubble liquid out in the yard, you know, has seen children chasing after them, you know, and they pop. Well, they're socially fragile too, and you can want to live in a bubble till the cows come home, but the fact of the matter is, when a great big majority of the world's population can't get a cool and life sustaining drink of water, and they look at you ruining the planet, sooner or later somebody's going to start saying, you know, we got to do something about them people. And I'm not suggesting that they do, Angry. I like my bubble. But by God, there's a lot of truth in that old saying that, you know, one should live simply so that others can simply live.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, but see, look, you and I have talked about this before. I've mentioned it many times in my writings. We will be fighting over water and rice. And, you know, people who looked at rice as poor people's food, you know, I don't have anything to do with this. I eat my, you know, my tapas and my sushi and what have you. We will be fighting over simple survival goods eventually. And, you know, those who are in power know this, that the resources on this planet are not finite. But, you know, it's part of Europocentrism. And I mean that. And when I say that, I'm not talking about this the way white people think. I'm talking about the way Europeans have thought since the 15th century. Since, you know, Columbus, after the Reconquista, decided to expand the European project, right? And, you know, it goes into the Americas and the Crusades and shit go up after Pope Urban up into what we know as Middle East or Western Asia. You know, this idea of expansion, because Europe didn't have that much. So you have poor people who left Italy, or what became Italy and France and Germany and what have you, and they went out. They went out, right? So, you know, until we actually have that discussion on how we got to this position, no one's ever going to want to talk about anything you just raised. Because it's relative. And it's not a matter of racism. It's a matter of the mindset that has developed behind the paradigm. You know, that the idea that, well, Europe is the center of the world, right? So even though Europeans have always been and remain to be the smallest, you know, human group, you know, Caucasians, Europeans, if you really want to, you know, get into a racial thing. This idea that Europocentrism is the only legitimate paradigm in which we are to base everything, because these people see themselves and they say, well, there's not that many of us, right? And I'm thinking about the Rockefeller report on this too. There's not that many of us. So we can use up all of the oil, all the petroleum resources. We can use up all of the water. We can fuck up the sky as much as we want. We can do this because there's not that many of us. See, it's okay if we hog all of these resources. Everybody else just has to make do. And you understand where I'm coming from with this. The United States, you know, I mean, we talk a lot about the prison population, and we should. A quarter of the world's prison population, okay. But think about the fact that the United States eats up more than 60, some say 78% of the world's resources. There's a mindset behind colonialism, the idea that all of this that I see is mine.
Yeah, I read something the other day, Angry, that it takes 60% more resources to raise a child in the United States than it does in the rest of the world.
Yeah, because anybody that's been raised poor knows this. I mean, both my parents worked, and while we didn't have very much, I have to say, I ate every day, and I'm grateful for that. And I had one mother who I had a mother who was, you know, educated. So, you know, I'm very grateful. But, you know, there's a lot of folks, man, who they don't, you know, people look at them. It's like 10, 15 kids. It's like a lot of Puerto Rican families, right? Stereotypical. 10, 15 kids. And it's like, well, how the hell are you happy? And they're like, oh, we have love. Because, you know, we share everything out. We make things work. We make it stretch. You know, we find a way to do it. You know, in my Gullah tradition, they don't think it's anything to raise a child. You want fish, you get it from the river. At least that's the way we used to be able to do it. Clothes were made at home for the most part and handed down. There was no fashion to keep up with. There was when you went to school, you didn't have to have the right shoes. You didn't have to have the right haircut, right? Everybody was theoretically on the same level. They didn't have a problem. My father was one of 18. And you know, and he was only raised with 13 in the house. They didn't think it was a problem to raise any of them, and they were poor. You know, in one sense, because this is what they were used to, and they didn't know any better, and that needs to be acknowledged as a factor, as a dynamic. But the bottom line was, they weren't trying to keep up with the Joneses, because there was no Joneses,
you know,
to keep up with.
And the experience you're talking about is the same experience that Joe Bagent writes about in Rainbow Pie, which is still not published in the United States, but you can get it like on Kindle. But it's a different world. That's that world where people lived subsistence lives and were kind of okay with it. I mean, 100 years ago, well, more than now, but my grandmother was the eldest of her father's then crop of children, like his third wife, because they had a way of dying out from under him. Women did that back then. They still do in much of the world. But there was a little bit of an age gap, so she went off to school, and she went and got herself a teacher's certificate, and she sent her next sister through teaching school. That sister sent the next sister through teaching school. And that way. And at the same time, the farm remained the farm. You know, I only found out last fall that the house has been torn down, and I stood there and looked where it used to stand, and I cried. But my great-grandfather's old apple trees are still growing, or their progeny. But that's, you know, that's a different America. That is the America that had to be done away with by the need to maintain a constant war-level economy in a post-war world. You know,
but what came before that? That's when you had Edward Bernays and the idea that you have to get Americans into being, you know, brainwashed into, like, if I buy this particular product, if I have this item,
that's how you maintain the persistent war economy in a non-war state.
Mm-hmm.
Is by
John Foster Dulles wrote about this a lot.
Some people are trying to go backward toward that, but it's really, really difficult to do when, say, your electric power bill is, you know, $300-$400 a month. Because the culture we're talking about there, your Gullah culture, my white hillbilly culture, there was very little actual cash on hand.
Well, people bought it and traded, you know, for a lot.
Right.
You know, a lot.
But you know, you traded your excess wheat, your excess corn, your excess barley, whatever, your fruit, grapes, what have you. You traded that for stuff you couldn't produce, like sugar, cloth, shotgun shells. I actually have the ledgers of a general store out the road here from 100 years ago. And you can see in the clerk's spidery little script, you can see how these lives worked. And they often ran on credit, and you would run on credit until the crops came in, and then you'd come in and settle the account. And that economy actually worked. And it worked all the way up till 1929, because my grandfather was the shopkeeper. And when the Republicans ruined the economy and everything fell apart,
he continued to extend credit to the people in his community so that they would stay alive until he was financially ruined. Of course, then when he looked around for a little bit of help, nobody knew him.
But see, Henry Wallace wanted to come in and help people like that. See, that's the type of business structure that he was looking at. And he almost did it, if it wasn't for Truman and the rest of the Democratic machine at that time that wanted him out of the way. Agrico, or if that was the name of the firm that he had started, was sold to the private sector not too long ago for quite a bit. But he started it off on the type of model that you're talking about. Look, you know, the American, and I have to say this because this is the reality. You know, we're talking about white people for the most part. The settlers here, you know, the white American, did not buy things. Americans bought what they needed. You got a good truck, and it used to be, you know, and I've knew enough older people who could attest to this, that when you bought American, you bought something that lasted. American engines used to last. American tools used to last. American made furniture from a certain era, a certain period. There are still people who hang on to these things because they still fucking work. There's a Studebaker in my town that still works.
Oh, yeah.
There was a quality of, and maybe it had to be, it came about because of the European craftsmen that came in from Germany and from Italy and what have you. They had a certain, I will not let this leave until it's perfect because I made this. There used to be an ethic here about this. Now, everything is throw away. So when we talk about, you know, child, you know, rearing, I mean, no, Ms. Angry Indian and I never started a family. But you know, almost all of our friends have children. And they have to have iPods. They have to have iPads in some cases. They have to have all of these things. They have to have shoes. They have to have this. And even though our friend said it's not particularly materialistic, you know, when they go to school and they deal with their other mates, they have all of these things. And, you know, yeah, if it costs, you know, how much, whatever it is to raise in the United States, it has a lot to do with the culture here. And then, like you said, it goes back to, you know, the idea of capitalism, the idea of the war economy to supplement capitalism. You don't have to be a Marxist to see that, even though Marx pointed this out. Lenin was very clear. When we look at the international state that the United States is in right now, it is the collapse of capitalism. It is imploding. It is doing whatever it needs to do to survive. That's why Obama was elected, because it is adjusting itself to survive.
It is the death howls of a great dying beast, Angry.
And let it go. You know, but the only problem is you usually have chaos before you have order. And if we have people who are uneducated and who do not understand basic politics,
well, we're a little short on time now, and this has been a magnificent conversation, one of our absolute best, I think, Angry. We're a little short on time, but you know, I shared earlier that monumental asshat Hoppy Kirchival's "Go away, federal government! Don't give us your federal Marshall Plan for Appalachia money." All of that silly stuff.
Yeah.
But within the context of the issue you just raised, I just had a light bulb go on for me. We have asked. Among those of us who do the kind of activist work that I do, you know, we have talked a lot about a just transition away from a coal-fired economy, a coal-fired mono-economy. And we've talked about how we'd like to see sustainable economy take root in Appalachia. But based on what you just said about the chaos that comes after, I honest to God think that these acolytes and prostitutes for the hydrocarbon extractors, I think they're looking. I think they want that chaos.
Of course they do.
Because then they can come in and really grind down and really put the boot down and really get control.
Of course.
And then they won't have to buy politicians anymore because they'll just be the fucking government.
They'll just roll in. That's what Hitler did. And Mussolini did the same thing. They allowed labor disputes to get out of hand. Instead of negotiating, they kept pushing them back. It happened here in the 30s, too. They kept pushing them back. So, of course, the left, meaning the anarchists, the social democrats, the communists, they were supporting the working people. So then they said, here's this left-wing threat. And they used that and the Nuremberg fire to change the entire government legally. Hitler did not march into Berlin. He was voted for in Berlin. And sure. Then he used, you know, social issues that were, you know, contestable to get in. So it's the same thing. We just finished talking about this with Pam Geller. She got two people shot up in Texas. She's trying to do it again in Phoenix because they feel that the more that they can show that, you know, I mean, hey, Breivik never happened. James Holmes never happened. The cat that shot up Gabby Giffords, that never happened. The Waco shooting never happened. None of those things happened, but we'll continue to push what happened in Texas. We'll talk about the freak out that happened on that base. I believe that was in Texas as well, with the Muslim soldier,
yeah.
the psychologist who was dealing with people coming back from PTSD so he could get them healthy enough to go back into the field because they were stopgapping.
And it drove him mad in his own right.
Well, it drove him mad when he told him that they were sending his ass in. That's when he flipped out. I mean, he was already probably having all kinds of issues as a professional and as a human being dealing with these men telling him what they're seeing and how they can't tell anybody, and women who are saying that they're being sexually assaulted and they can't tell anybody. And then they say, yeah, well, we're going to send your ass. And then he said, well, hell no. And he flipped out. You know, we have to have a populace that is educated, that understands politics, that understands economics at a very basic level, and understands the position of the United States on the international level, and has to be willing to say, we've dealt with colonialism here too, we have terrorist organizations like the Klan in our midst too, and we have the Republican Party, which is becoming slowly a fascist goddamn party, and we have to be able to admit this so that we can deal with it. Until these things are done, nothing is going to change. We're going to stay on this goddamn Sharknado roller coaster ride that goes up and down.
Oh, wait, you just got
it. Like a merry-go-round.
You just get that in a toaster for Sharknado roller coaster ride, brother. I mean, that's perfect. That is just perfect. You're right. You know, that's the added bonus here. You're right. We're running out of time, but let me ask you a couple of things. Please. Give the link where people can get your show.
AboriginalRadio.wordpress.com.
And radio is just radio, R-A-D-I-O?
Yeah, it's just radio. And okay. You can check out our news blog at ang-newswire.blogspot.com.
Okay, but for the podcast, AboriginalRadio.wordpress.com?
Yes, it is.
Okay, beautiful. I've got a note here from Kevin asking for that, and I'll get probably 10 more between now and tomorrow. Asking the same. So
hey, I got a lot more listeners from your family that have come over and checked me out, and I hope I've brought more people over to you. And we have to do that. We have to support each other's programming, because if we don't do that, no one's going to know. You know, no one's going to know that it's out here if we don't talk about it.
Absolutely.
We have to promote each other.
Absolutely.
You know, and you know, and on that, I'm going to go. But, you know, like I said, if you can, you know, spare some coins, please help Kincaid stay on the air, support any broadcaster right here that you like. We have to get Bernie Sanders to get in. It opens the door. We can change the system before it completely corrupts. Peace.
Thank you, Angry. And thank you for a wonderful conversation. Our buddy, the Angry Indian, let's see, we will close the program. Let me just double check here real quick. We will close the program with $310 to go. Thank you very kindly for closing a big chunk of that gap, Thomas Jugapunch. It is deeply appreciated. He said, have some dirt. We need to stop digging holes. Thank you. That is huge, Thomas. Let's see. Time to get out of here. In a hurry. Thanks to all of you who support the program. Thanks to all of you who share your precious finite time engaged in the conversation, however you do so. Thank you to our all-volunteer staff. Thank you to the hardest working, bravest people I know, the men and women of Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net, and ACHECT, A-C-H-E-A-C-T, .org. And always, 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 Gina, it's all for you.